United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned as part of the PTL club. What am I supposed to do? Well, the government seems to be cheating, selling us to the enemy. And those who're supposed to be preaching are no
let's go. Welcome to Tracy and Friends, weekdays from 9 to noon. It's the local talk show that stimulates your mind and keeps you thinking about things going on in your world. From local issues to topics of global importance, Tracy and Friends keeps the conversation going. Call to talk to Tracy and Friends at 347-945-5229, 330-781-9600, or toll free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at TracyandFriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Friends here on WSOM AM 600. It is 9 minutes after the 9 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock. I'm tongue-tied this morning. Good morning, Six.
But you're doing a wonderful job of harmonizing.
Ace, good morning.
It's 3 below 0.
Yeah, and I can feel it. And I can go outside in it. I can drive in it. I can see it. It's a good day.
3 below 0.
I can feel it.
Are you sure you didn't have a happy pill this morning?
No. Well, okay. And I took some pills. Now, don't get me wrong, because, you know, I've got this cold, so I'm taking some happy pills.
Okay.
But, you know, I have, when I was first diagnosed with MS, I lost all feeling in my leg, so I couldn't feel water.
Oh.
So I couldn't feel hot water, couldn't feel cold water. It could rain, and I couldn't feel it.
Just one leg or both legs?
Just one leg.
Okay.
And my right leg. And, you know, I don't think you really pay attention to stuff that's, you know, you feel until you can't feel it anymore. And it went, there was a rain, we had a picnic and it was raining, and I, for the first time and maybe a couple months later, I could feel a raindrop on my leg.
It's
a good day.
Because of
MS.
Because of my spinal cord thing, I have parts of my body that are numb, but they tingle all the time. Now, did you have that sensation, or was it just plain nothing?
I just couldn't feel anything. I mean, it wasn't paralyzed, but, you know, like raindrops and water. Put your foot in a hot tub
just
of water.
Just water. You couldn't feel anything.
I could feel, if you poked me, I could feel it.
Okay.
But like water, light stuff.
Okay.
You would think that, you know, you would to try to describe it. It was very It was really weird because, you know, you get in the tub and you put your toe in and be too cold. Couldn't feel that.
Couldn't feel too cold.
Sensations.
Okay.
Like your teeth, sensations, hot, cold, that kind of thing. Couldn't feel it. Couldn't feel the water landing on it.
Right.
Nothing like that.
See, because of the spinal cord injury, I part of my body that's affected just feels like it's asleep all the time. So I walk around with that tingling.
Now, that's how it started. And that's how it started. Okay. My foot was asleep, and it wouldn't wake up. And I just thought it was RLS. And I just kept on going. But I will say I'm very, very grateful because I can see it. I mean, I can see the sun, and it's cold outside, and I can feel it. And it's a good day. Today is the 12th, 2 days to Valentine's Day.
And you have a Valentine yet?
No, I don't have a Valentine yet.
Hey, no. We need to find Tracy a Valentine.
I don't have a Valentine yet. Turn your mic up. You're down too low. Hey, good morning, Matt. How are you?
I'm good, Tracy. How are you guys doing in there?
I'm doing good. I'm happy. Can you tell?
Well, I'm going to have that song going through my head for the next week.
That's good. That's good.
All I pictured you was bopping around the studio there all happy and watching Styx just kind of stare at you kind of funny. Unless he's happy, too. I don't know. Maybe you guys were doing a duet.
Happy. Everybody, it was a happy day.
Everybody's so happy.
Me and Phil Robertson, happy, happy, happy.
Yeah, we're doing the happy thing. I was going to tell you something. Today's conversation is going to be somewhat of open mic, but I want to get some questions in from my listening audience who may have questions about the conversation that went on yesterday. I asked Styx, because Styx was listening in yesterday, and there were some things that he wanted to jump in and say and or ask, because it was a very, very closed conversation, per se, about a lot of things that go on and what people think in the black community.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys, if you know me, you know that I'm all about opening up and inclusion, because I'm not an exclusive person. And so I want to talk about that today, and I'm glad, Matt, you're here for as long as you can stay here, because I want you to join into this conversation also, because we need to have the dialogue back and forth so that we have total understanding. What do you think?
You know, I enjoyed your guest yesterday, but towards the end there, he had me a little bit worried because of some conversation that was happening when you went to break between him and South Carolina. And, you know, I don't want to say that he, as a matter of fact, the one guy who's always in the chat room pointed it out to me like this, because I said, you know what, he's starting to look anti-white to me. And he said, no, he says, I think he's just more pro-black. Not sure where the divide is there, but it would be an interesting thing to talk about today and try to null out where he was at, because it just seemed to turn funny on me towards the end of the show yesterday.
Well, I have a very – I got a question, Tracy.
Okay. And I'm going to bring Alabama in so he can join in.
Whites tend to look at themselves as Italian or Irish or Welsh or whatever. Is that – and it seems like blacks, at least in the United States, lump themselves all together in one
ethnic. What are we?
I don't know.
That's what we're trying to tell you.
Because here's the thing. I mean, are there different
– There were. But remember, we've got to understand, when you came over here during the Middle Passage, you came on slave ships. So when you came over here and the slave masters stripped you of all of your African identity.
Right.
So they changed your name, they changed your language, and they never gave you any reference of where you come from, period. So you take a sheet of paper who had a lot of writing on it, and you set it into a bowl of bleach, and you white it out.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, this is where you start. And so remember, black people in America are indigenous to America because they have been crossbred in America that has no ties to Africa per se, because we don't know anything really about our ancestry across the water.
Okay.
And that was done by design.
Right, because any human being, if you can destroy their – if you can sever them from their roots, you can control them easier.
And so what they've done what has happened is you can say, well, I'm from Ireland. I can't say I'm from West Africa. I can't say I'm from Ghana. I can't say I'm from South Africa. I can't say I'm from Johannesburg. I can't say I'm from this part of the largest continent in the world where I know that I have originated from.
Okay.
I can't say that I came from any part of it. And right now they're trying to identify it through DNA. But
Well,
we're still far
away
from
it. The thing is, now we're all Americans. I mean, we're.
Yes and no, because
no, I'm talking about just from a strictly DNA point, because we're all mutts now.
Yeah, we're all mutts now. But see, my mutts still distinguish me as a black mutt.
Right. Because we've talked about this a million times. I can clean up and put on a suit, and you can't change the color of your skin.
And people, and there are still prejudices
right
out there. And so when you ask, well, people, you can't identify from anywhere besides saying that I am a African American because I come from the continent of Africa. And people have done some genealogy trying to go back, and some people have been successful. But it's very, very difficult, should I say, very, very difficult to go back across the pond to find out what part of the pond in Africa you come from, because we have been so deluded.
You know what, Tracy? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Styx.
No, go ahead, Matt.
I was just going to say, yesterday, one of the important things that I think a lot of people are missing, and this is something I tried to explain to your guest yesterday, Jason, and I said, I think it's just as important. I said, I understand that the black community needs to get to come together, understand their roots, their heritage, understand where they are. You know, I understand all that. But I said, right now, there's one thing you can't ignore, and that's that, you know, the majority of the population is white. And I think that along with educating your black community, you have to include white people and educate them with the process at the same time. Because as you know, I wasn't racist when I started listening to this show, but there was a lot, most of it, I didn't understand where the black community was coming from. I was coming from, you know, where everybody else comes from. You know what? The past was the past. Let's leave it in the past and go forward. That's where I was at. Well, I didn't realize all these things. I tried to explain that to your guest, and he seemed to really sidestep that quite a bit. And I think educating the white community along with getting the black community back on board to where, you know, they should be in their community, like what you talk about every day, I think that's just as important, because otherwise nobody's going to know in the majority of the country, because that's where we're at, where we're headed. You know what I mean?
But see, it's twofold. Let me say this. White people are not the majority in the world anymore.
We never were.
It's always been people of color and people yellow and brown.
Yeah, white people have never been the worldwide.
No, they never have.
I didn't say the world.
Okay,
I said this country,
But then, as we see it, it is still browning. The browning of America is still happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because even with the Anglo-Saxons and the Italians and the Irish, they're all blending.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is blending together now. African-Americans are even blending into white, and whites blending into black.
Yes.
And it's happening. And you have your Latinos, and they're blending into America's fold also.
And that's a good thing.
It's a good thing. But then your heritage still needs to stand. Because when you begin to – we try to erase America's past. And see, that's where –
yeah, we can't decode it. I wouldn't say erase it. I'd say candy coat it. We pick and choose.
Right. And we don't want everybody to know just how evil America has been in the past. We try to, you know, home of the brave, land of the free. We just have this. And that's not what it is. Even today, today's days are very, very dark. America's doing some real dirty stuff right now, especially with spying on its citizens. Especially with how they're eroding the Constitution.
When you say America,
If it had been 50 years ago, and I was working out in the field or in the house with you, no matter how much compassion you would have on me, you might treat me halfway decent, but you wouldn't treat me like you do today. Because it wouldn't be allowed.
But when you say America, and you were talking about what's going on today, is it America, or are we just asleep and letting our government railroad us?
America is America. America
is not.
Yes, it is. America speaks with one voice, whether you stay silent or not. because silence is affirmation.
I have to go back to the oath.
What oath?
I do solemnly swear to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Right, and no one is defending us anywhere. And the government, we are the people.
But the thing, and the problem is, though, anytime somebody stands up to defend the Constitution, they get knocked down as a crazy person.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
You know what? I see where Tracy's coming from in this, and I understand it, but here's the difference. I belong to a lot of different blogs from a bunch of different countries, Australia, New Zealand, even France, I hate to admit it. But there's a lot of other people from out of the country that I speak with. And the one thing I find interesting is, like, Tracy, you're saying we speak with one voice. Well, these other countries really don't see it. They see the administration and what's going on in Washington as separate from the rest of America.
But again, America, when we go to war, we go to war with one voice. America, when they come over here to bomb America, we are all one. And so it may be a wacky government, but the people here in America rule. So the people who are your administration, whether you like it or not, President Barack Obama is the president of every American citizen in the United States, whether you like him or not.
That's true.
And you don't have to agree with him. But because you don't agree with him and you don't do anything about your disagreement, you stand in affirmation with him.
Yeah, there's a sin of omission.
Absolutely. And until America wakes up and understands that they're going to have a representative government that's going to represent them, then we still speak with one voice.
So what do you think about Rand Paul's lawsuit?
Rand Paul's lawsuit, he has no one behind him. He speaks as a lone ranger.
No, he doesn't. He's got a lot of people behind him. He just doesn't have the power structure.
There's no organization.
You don't need an organization to go to court.
You got to have order to go to do what you're doing.
You need to go to court is money.
You missed my point.
I guess I did.
He needs to have infrastructure behind him to make great impact.
I was just talking about the lawsuit. I wasn't talking about the whole.
I'm just saying the whole thing. He needs people behind him who agree with him. We want a constitutional amendment, but we're not organized enough to have the amendment to be reorganized because we don't speak with an organized effort. And anything that there's no order, then you're a lone wolf barking at the moon.
So do you think he stands a chance of winning the lawsuit or not?
No. And even if he does, what will happen? What will come out of it?
Well, then the Justice Department will be forced by the Supreme Court to close the NSA.
No, it's not going to happen.
Am I supposed to get in and jump in like double dutch again today? Or are y'all going to let me talk?
Your mic's been on since the beginning. What are you talking about? I told you.
Well, I was just the guest. You guys were talking about the guest. I wanted to try to interject, but y'all just jumped on the
fall
now.
But
this is my thing. As a black conservative, I agree with most of what the guy says. The white friends part that he made with South Carolina, I have white friends, so I don't look at it like that. He's talking about he's for black empowerment. I've had white people give me money to do stuff, like to not just loom up to my $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $10,000 to start my housing when I got into housing when I first got started, as a favor through my father. But at the same time, the guy did it. So I just don't look at everybody like that. But I think what whites have to understand is I think he's just saying, look, like how Malcolm X was saying, look, we cannot join in with people who we don't know. It's like trying to come in and intermingle with people that some people may not have the purest motives. Everybody doesn't come into a group. If you guys have a group or something, just like the CIA, you go back in history. This guy's only operating from what's happened when we tried to come together in the past, from Marcus Garvey, every institution that we've had, the NAACP, the federal government sent operatives in to disrupt on purpose to stop things. So when people come and look at African Americans and say, well, hey, just see color, stop seeing color, it's kind of hard for black people to think like that whenever we've tried to do something, the federal government control under white people went and did things to black people to stop them from obtaining any sense of empowerment. And that's what he's saying. So it's like he's just saying, look, it's not that we hate you. We're just let's just let us focus on us. Now, the part about the white, the black, white friends part, I'm different on that now. But at the same time, I get the gist of what he's trying to say because I've been seeing all his video.
But can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
And this is real talk. Do I judge you by the color of your skin? Because I've had some black folks throw me under the bus, run over me, and then come back and shoot me in the head.
Well, I mean, when you get into that, you're talking about black people dealing with the fact that you're Republican.
No, just black people. As a matter of fact, if you look in your family, you got some black folks with a gun. So do I begin to judge a man by his character, or do I judge a man by their skin color? Because if...
I mean, how is this pretty, though? How is this pretty?
If I judge all people by the color of the cover of the skin and think that they've got my back, and then judge you because, or don't judge you because, all white people are bad and you are going to hate me and kill me, and I think all black people are going to help me and lift me up, then I'm in a big, big mess.
No. What he's saying is, look, if you bring in a group, if you have a group of individuals trying to do something, all of them are alike, right? Being black, they have this in common. And they come and they work. You can pretty much assure that they're going to have that level of loyalty. It's going to be a certain level of loyalty, a unity, because we all have a common purpose. But when you bring someone in that doesn't have that common core, I'm not saying, look, and I know that sounds like, oh, be racist. No, I'm not saying be racist or segregationist, but let's at least understand that these people have something in common, and they're working for their own empowerment. And the government, because of the past, because of what's been done through the federal government and through the United States, let's not just act as though that black people, oh, let's just trust anybody. Give us time. And that's what he said. Yes, he was like, let's build ourselves up first. And then in time, if you want to try this stuff, he said fantasy or whatever he was trying to say this out. If you want to try that stuff, fine. Because right now, if I want to go join up with some Asians, I can. Because they're not in prison. They're not dealing with the things that we've had to deal with. Can Asians cite one or two instances where they've been singled out as Asians? Yeah. Most people can't. Asians, not Asians, but Irish. Notre Dame's Fighting Irish mascot used to be, they used to be called white niggers. That's what they used to be called.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's not even offensive to them to see Notre Dame Fighting Irish. If you go back and look at the part of Europe where they came from, that's what it's, they're going to get all that. But I'm just saying, I mean, a lot of that stuff is set up. The way he was trying to set it up, it wasn't that. I don't take it like that. I wouldn't take it like that now.
Alabama, I got a question for you. Because he said something that made me pause. He said that black people have a moral obligation to do business with black businesses. Now, I got two questions for you. One, say there's only one black tailor in town, and he's the crappiest tailor on the planet. Is this guy saying that just because he's black that all the black people need to go there and give him their business? And two, if that is the case, then what gives any black businessman the incentive to do a good job if he knows he's already got a captive audience and all the black people in the community?
That's a great question. And I do feel like, as a black person, if I find a black business, let's be honest, we've all been to McDonald's and gotten crappy service. We've been to Walmart and caught a black woman working at Walmart and treated us like dirt.
I lost him.
What
are you saying, Matt?
No, I was just going to say we lost. You know, the only thing that I still have to go back to is, you know, is the way that these things are delivered as far as ideas. If Alabama and you, Tracy, were standing in front of me and another white guy who isn't educated as far as I am right now on what's going on, and you in Alabama were to talk about, you know what, we need to get together and we need to figure out what we're going to do as black people in a black community and go do your thing, the white person standing next to me is going to think that that's racist. And that's why I think that, you know, when we're talking about this, when Jason was talking about this, I think that we have to be a little more careful on our words and understand that some people are going to think what we're saying, even though it's not, is racist.
But let me ask you this. Why should he care? Why should he care if, and I understand, look, I understand and I agree with you, but at the same time, a guy like Jason, if black people listen to him and they go out and they're inspired by him and they go out and do something and they empower black people, then the ends justifies the means in my book. I can care less if some other person is offended because everybody, after a while, when you get, if that catches on and you sit down and you talk to these people, you'll see in real, most of these people, if you talk to them, say, I don't hate white people. I just see what's going on, and we have to take certain precautions because of what's happened in this country.
And you're
right. And that's what I'm saying. When people come in, you can't be, and I'm not trying to insult anybody, but you can't be ignorant to what has happened in our past in this country, like many people are. Oh, you black people are just lazy. As if all these black people from all these 400 years hadn't tried to do anything, and it's all been, we just sat here and watched everybody else. As if we hadn't been infiltrated and told, okay, this is how we're going to make you think. We're going to try to formulate ways to make you think. We're going to try to do this. We're going to do this. And they did it, and they succeeded. So it's kind of hard to turn around and tell somebody, this guy's going to, you would have the same reaction from most white people if the roles were reversed. They would be saying the same exact, look, man, we need to start focusing just on us.
Alabama.
I don't see how that's racist.
Hey, listen, I'm going to take a break. I'll be right back.
You still there, Alabama?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me just ask you a quick question, and then I'll let you guys go. If I were listening to this show, and I've said this before, I've come on before just saying the past is the past, let's leave it in the past and move forward. Obviously, I was wrong about that, and I got an education. Now, if me and there was other white people like me that listened to Tracy and Friends for, say, just one day, okay, and then we went and listened to Jason for just one day, and then we say, listen, let's say you had a radio show and we listened to you for one day. There are white people that will turn around and go, every show that I've heard that is pro-black, which is good, and you're spreading the right message, and you're not racist, but the white people listening for just that amount of time, you might be turning them against the ultimate goal that you're trying to get to in this country.
I understand what you're saying, and I get it, but it's almost like I don't feel like we can live our lives worrying about that. We can't, because if we do, well, let's not offend. We're going to offend white.
It's not offending. I'm not worried. It's
make
not offending.
I think my thing is, and this is the way he's looking at it, this is the way Jason thinks. They are our enemies already. We're not going to make them any more offended than they already. They already are. That's the way he thinks.
Well,
he already sees you as an enemy in that regard, as a collective. I'm not talking about every individual.
Right.
Collectively,
you have to draw people in. That's the whole idea. Because collectively, we may have that interpretation of the black community.
But
you
what
have
do they
to
have? This is the thing. But saying that blacks already have every resource they need. They don't need another group. Because let's be honest, when you listen to Mexican radio, they're not speaking. It could be offensive, and it is offensive to a lot of people that they don't speak English. It's offensive to a lot of Asians that they speak their own language and they come over here. They don't care. They're only focusing on their own people, and they feel like we have the resources and wherewithal to get where we want to go on our own. We don't need other people. And I'm not trying to – I'm just coming from that side of it. I'm not saying that there aren't whites that could probably come in and would want to help but that can't help because of the wording of it. But when you're in a dire situation, such as the black community, which it is, I mean, the black community is about to be extinct. I mean, this guy, what's his name, Al Gore. We cry about Al Gore not getting the White House in Florida and disenfranchised and all this and that. Al Gore's over in Africa. He's over talking about they need to start controlling African population. They want the white folks up. These ain't our friends. And I'm not trying to say this like I'm not talking about you, but I'm just saying. Blacks have been deceived in a lot of areas, politics, everything, economics. We have been deceived. We've been miseducated, like Carter G. Woodson said. So when you look at it from that angle, you have to come in and purge and clean. And that's what he's doing. He's cleaning certain things up. And in time, you can do things like you can look at things without color because everybody's equal. Like Malcolm X said, he was like, when we all own our own manufacturing, and we can hire whites and y'all can hire blacks. But if it's only one way where you're only, you're 8% of the population of the world and you control all the wealth, and nobody else is on your equal footing,
you're happy
you won't get that respect.
This is a happy song.
Yeah. You walk the tangled streets of life, notice your fellow man, and when he gets in trouble, lend him a helping hand. Sow good seeds in your field of life, as you go along, let others reap your happiness a long time after you're gone. Leave a lot of happy tracks as you go down life's road.
Okay, turn yours down. Turn yours down.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.
Do you see the difference?
What?
All me,
yeah. It's got a beat.
Hey, let Kavita Man get in here today.
Dr. Hill is in studio with us. His mic's not up. Or it's not on. Hey, you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSLM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. Not so blind, Mike. Your mic's on. Dr. Hill, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. We're doing a recap of yesterday's show.
Okay.
We had a guy by the name of Jason Black, and I wanted to bring up some stuff. We're going to get to Rand Paul suing the president over spying on America, NSA, and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's Black History Month, and, you know, we don't do what's necessary in Black History Month to where everyone's learning Black history. Because I think white people need to learn Black history. They need to learn Black culture. To cohabitate, you need to have an understanding.
Sure.
Right.
Definitely.
And yesterday they listened in on a conversation, and in this conversation we were talking about, you know, making sure that African Americans and the Black community had economic empowerment. Pretty much dealing with Claude Anderson's theory of, you know, really understanding without economics in the community, you will have nothing.
True.
Which is true.
Very true.
But without education, you can't have economics because you won't know what to do with the money that you get.
True also.
And I say without politics, you will not be able to play in the economic game because money is about money. It's really not about race anymore. So nobody wants to give anybody anything except for them four and their more and no more. Because this is just dollars are no longer have. We'll let other white people have money, but we don't want Black people to have money. That's just not how it works anymore. They don't want anyone outside of their circle
to have money. Right.
Right.
And so you're fighting in a cat fight that you're going to have to jump in with all fours.
True.
And so Matt. Yes.
I was trying to get in. But my time is short. I just want to add in. I don't know why y'all didn't let me on yesterday. But I was going to add this. I think where Matt was coming from, and he was talking on Alabama doing a break there, and it kind of reveals why there's difficult conversation when Black people get together and start talking about how to improve situations with Blacks. And then when white people do listen in, like Matt is listening and joining in the conversation, there's a problem because Matt is under the impression, just like, you know, Phil Robinson was saying, you know, the Doug Dynasty guy, that, you know, back in his day, Black people wasn't complaining. It was going, it was, you know, life was going on and everybody's trying to get along. That was his impression. Similar to what Matt is, his impression is that the world was just okay until Black folks decided to start, you know, a few civil rights leaders start trying to make problems. And then all of a sudden, race became an issue. See, for white folks, it wasn't an issue. With them being on top, them being 100% or 99%, everybody else getting 1%, that was okay. That was how it was supposed to be. When Black folks stood up and said, no, we didn't particularly like that arrangement, then all of a sudden it was a problem. Now all of a sudden, you know, people like Matt and everybody else is saying, well, Black people, you know, you need to, you know, slow down. Don't start talking. It's so Black. And my analogy, I try to use this, you know, real briefly, it's like there's a line of people getting in a line, and Black folks at the end of this line. Everybody, Matt, his family, and Rick Robinson and their family, everybody's going in line, getting what they're getting. And as soon as Black folks get up to the front of the line, all of a sudden they shut down the line. And it's like, why y'all looking for a handout? What do you mean we're looking for a handout? Everybody was in the line. All of a sudden, the black folks got up there. Now, all of a sudden, everybody's anti-government. Everybody's anti-something as soon as black folks get a turn at the plate.
I want him to go to Matt first. Go ahead, Matt.
I just want to say, my point is being extraordinarily confused. I'm saying that if white people in this country do not understand what the true struggle of the black community is, then that is detrimental and creates an atmosphere of almost going back into racism again because they don't understand why the black community is doing what they're doing. I'm not saying that we need to be involved. I'm not saying that we need to, that the whites need to do anything. I'm just saying educate them like I'm being educated. I think it's important for white people to understand why they need to step back and allow the black community to do what it's doing.
Yeah, okay, I have no problem with that.
And hold on, and to be supportive of what they're doing.
Yes, I'll go with that too, absolutely.
And to be supportive of what they're doing, because if you look at the education system, if you want to fix the education system, we need to go back to the community and get the brain trust of our community to help fix our children and our families and our economic system. Because as Dr. Hill is in studio with me, there are things that go on within the nucleus of a black family that are different than the go on in the nucleuses of a white family. That he understands the dynamics of it when he talks to them.
Okay.
Would you say that, Doc?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And so I need to go to him and ask him about family medical issues and what goes on there so that we can try to fix the problem of why we're having so many children out of wedlock. And I will say this. I was sitting in a room not too long ago, and a young lady was pregnant. And I noticed how much attention she was getting by her baby's father, who she was not married to. And she was leaning all into him, and he was rubbing on her belly and she trying to make her comfortable. And I said, wow, this is what she needs all the time. And so while I'm pregnant, this is what I get.
And when I'm not pregnant,
I don't get it.
True.
So the next time I get pregnant, I expect to have the same thing. Hold on. So he
action
will under-
reward.
Act right. And so he will understand that mindset when he sees it, where a white doctor may not even pay attention to it when it comes in the door.
True.
Okay. I'm going to ask Kavina Man the same question that I asked Alabama. The gentleman yesterday said that black people have a moral obligation to do business with other black people. And I'm going to ask Kavina Man the same question. If there's one black tailor in town and he's the crappiest tailor on the planet, one, is the black community required to do business with him just because he's black? And two, if that's the case, then what gives him any incentive to be a better tailor? And then I'd also like to respond to him about the little small government thing. My grandfather understood the Federal Reserve and how it was going to screw everybody who was lower middle class and below. So that's been going on for 100 years. But go ahead, Kavina.
Yeah, in response to the question, If a business is a crappy business, I believe that you would go into the business, or I as a black person would go into that business, and I would talk to the owner. Just simply, I would say, we are supportive of black business, and we want to support you, and we will wish to do so in the future. However, we're observing this particular problem with your business X, Y, and Z, and it's up to him to decide if he wants to change that or not. And if he doesn't, then that would be a financial incentive or a business incentive. He would create a vacuum of black folks would probably somebody else would create an alternative to that business. And I believe that this is what I want to say yesterday on the show. And I couldn't get in, but because especially he was talking about the black hair care business, and I think that's a prime example of everything that went wrong. The hair care business, prime example of what went wrong with the black community with with the so-called black group economics, because we had a monopoly. Nobody else has hair like us. We had a monopoly. We had Soul Train running advertisements on, you know, Afro Sheen, and everybody would go down to their neighborhood black store and buy it. Me being here, I grew up in Pasadena. Everybody knew there was one place to go get the black hair care products. It was on the corner of Lake and Orange Grove. Y'all don't know that, y'all, because y'all from, but everybody knew where that place was. One day we went in there in the 80s, and all of a sudden that same place, that same business, was now owned by a Korean. Every black person did not live in Pasadena, but every black person had almost the exact or similar situation where their hair care product store was owned by a black person. Then all of a sudden they woke up one day and it was owned by a Korean. Now, I don't know what goes on in Korea. I don't know if this had to do with the Korean War. Are they mad at black people for showing up in Korean War? But how did the heck the Koreans infiltrating the black community? I'm just
Let me answer your question. Because I was in California in the 80s working inside of the hair care industry when that happened. I cut my teeth on Soft Sheen Carefree Curl and Optimum Relaxer. That's where I began. That's where I began my business career. What happened was you had to have more than one horse. And then we have not learned how to work together behind the scenes. So what would happen is when you would buy products, you would buy them by the case or by the truck. And if you bought a whole truck, your cost would come down. And so we would go to a hair show, and the Koreans would come in with a suitcase full of cash. And a black owner would sit there and have a stack of bills that he needed to pay. And he would, that cash looked good, and he would give him a good price for the cash that he was going to get. And so he sold him his product at a discount. And the black man came in, and he still had terms. He had to buy on credit because he was working on a 40% markup. And the Koreans came in, and they were working on a 15% markup. And they would bring all their money together. So it's like me, Styx, and Dr. Hill coming into a room and putting all of our money in a pool and saying, we'll buy this television station for this price. And then me coming over here saying, well, I'll buy your television station, but you got to give me 45 days to pay for it. But I got bills in front of me. They took the cash because we never learned how to collectively pool our resources together to work together to sustain the hair care industry. That is the truth, and that's just what happened. That happened in the beauty and barber supply, and that also happened inside of the collective of the chemicals that we were buying. We never learned how to pull our resources together, to trust one another, and to come up with an organizational effort to allow us to work together like the Koreans do and still are doing to this day.
Yeah, no doubt. I take it that exactly as you say what happened. But my problem or my complaint is that how can we talk about group economics, right, if we couldn't even handle our own monopoly? Mm. Now, let alone trying to say we're gonna come up with a shoe industry, or we're gonna come up with something that we're trying to now make a niche for when we couldn't handle the monopoly we have. The only monopoly we probably have right now is the black barber. And black dudes are different than black women. Black dudes are not going to go into a Korean barbershop. Black women will go into, like the caller that called in yesterday, and she was like, I don't see color anymore. What's that color? What's that? I don't know. I don't understand that. And that's the whole thing. The difference between black women, they don't see color. I'm pretty sure that woman had a white man. She probably, they don't see color. Black dudes, we understand. We understand what war looks like because we've been on a war field. So we understand when somebody's coming
in. Hold on, Sylvina, man. Because when you brought a whole lot of nuances into that. She probably had a white man. Black men don't do this. But black men don't take care of black women, a lot of them. So with that said, you gotta put that in there. Because if they took care of their own, then we wouldn't have this conversation. And we would have a family structure and a family unit.
Hold on 1 second. Tracy, you have to look at the fact that the government, there's a war in the black community. It's two types of black people. You got those that believe that government can do everything, and then you got those that think that, okay, screw the government. They ain't helped us. Let's do it on our own. So it's kind of a twofold, two-pronged argument. So most black people are on the first one, the former. They're the ones that say, hey, let's go to the government. The government's going to fix it. And that's the problem. I think that you look at black women, they're very big proponents of the government. They're the first ones going to call the police and make sure you go to that prison industrial complex. They're the first ones. They're spending the 80 cents every dollar to these Korean women and to these other people from all other races. Black women are our problem. I ain't trying to say it like, I mean, yeah, has been relegated. Go ahead.
Hold on, Alabama. I'm going to take a break really quick. But listen to this. You are right. But that's because a black woman has no head. And when she has no leadership in her home, she will follow anything that sings a song to her. I'll be right back.
Armory is changing the way America buys firearms with a commitment to training and safety. Get a free 3-hour expert training class from ATG Worldwide with every in-store firearm purchase. Visit National Armory at the corner of State Route 7 and Walnut Street in Rogers and Mahoning Avenue in Austintown for the best selection of firearms and accessories in the area. Then get to your free training class from ATG Worldwide with your new firearm purchase. National Armory. Shoot, hunt, train.
Broadcasting from the Ford Studios, just in time for the auto show, now is the best time to drive a Ford, especially the 2014 F-150, built with the power to get the job done and the fuel economy that can't be beat. Online at drive1ohio.com.
Attention all healthcare professionals. Is your practice accepting new patients? Are you looking to grow your business? If so, listen to this opportunity. Our radio station, which is part of Cumulus Media, is publishing and distributing 20,000 free local medical guides this spring. It includes a physician's listing, as well as marketing opportunities for your practice. This is a great opportunity for you to attract new patients. Make sure your practice is included in the medical guide. For all the details, call me, Brad Marshall, at 330-779-8127.
I'm Matt Ray. We're following these stories for Wednesday's America's Morning News. The National Weather Service warns the Atlanta area of a storm that could reach historical proportions. Investors get positive news from the new head of the Fed, and House GOP leaders say they'll advance this week an increase in the government's borrowing cap free of any add-ons. These stories and much more on Wednesday's America's Morning News, where the nation's news breaks.
Howdy, howdy. I'm so excited. Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce is at the grocery store. That's right. You can get Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce right at the store. That means you can put back the thick and muddy. If you can't taste the meat, what's the point? Pick up the smooth and delicate Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce. Next time you find yourself down at the market, remember, Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce, the full cup of love.
Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce is now available at the grocery stores. Ask your grocer for a cup of love.
If you can't taste the meat, then what's the point?
This time, it's personal. The local talk show that keeps you thinking about local, regional, national, and global issues. Let's get back to Tracy and friends on News Talk 600 WSOM.
With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way.
Back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. In studio with me is Dr. Hill and Sticks. And on the phones we have Matt, Covina Man. Covina Man, I think he's left. Matt, he said he had to go.
Yeah, he said he had to go.
438 Stanley is in the room. And Jeff is in there. Yeah, hey, Stanley, how are you this morning?
Oh, my God. What happened yesterday? I tried to call and call and anyway.
There were. I had more phone line. I had more people calling in than I've ever seen before in my whole history of being
Tracy,
on air.
Tracy, let me first say congratulations for inviting Jason Bart. Congratulations for inviting this person. I've heard this person for such a long time. I'm a subscriber in his YouTube thing, which is Black Authority. He talks about that every day. I love what he said yesterday. I love what he said. You see, he said the same thing that I said. He said, having a job is the worst thing ever. Being an entrepreneur is the best thing ever. If we don't have economic strength, we have nothing. And that's the message that I hope that a lot of people got.
I hope they got that too, because I agree with that. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I don't necessarily agree with the political stand that he takes, and I definitely don't agree with the exclusivity. I'm not an exclusive person. I'm all inclusive. I want everybody to work together as one comprehensive unit. That's just who I am.
I understand that. But the thing that he was doing exclusively, he was basically saying, and the thing that I wanted to call yesterday, I wanted to confirm is, I tried to go to a Jewish person and talk to him and ask him, a very influential Jewish person who owns a lot of building in New York, I was so shocked when he told me that, you know. And trust me, if I didn't go to another friend who knew him, who told him you could talk to him, he would have never told me anything.
That's true.
They're so tight. He would have never told me anything. It took another Jewish friend who was a close friend of mine to talk to him. And he was like, he's black. I'm not going to say anything. As that Jewish person said to him, you could talk to him, he opened the whole gate of things that I was like, really? Go ahead.
Well, that's not necessarily just a black thing, because there are an awful lot of cliques that you have to be invited into, whether you're whatever you are, and that's what, you know, in a real estate, the rental real estate business, every book you read says join your local real estate landlords association, because after a while they'll let you in. I mean, so to
and
say
then they may not tell you everything,
right? But the longer you're around and the more they get to know you, the more inclusive they will be.
But Sticks, I agree with Stanley in that. Blacks are a special group because every group excludes blacks on this planet that comes into this America. When it comes to black people, they're excluded. And then when it comes to blacks, we're supposed to be inclusive. But when it comes to everybody else, you can't go anywhere in anybody's community and start business and get information. But when it comes to black businesses or black people, we're told, racist. You're being this.
Hey, I'll be right back. I got to cut my top of the hour break.
Okay. Can you take off the? Can we talk, Tracy?
She gone.
I think the answer to that is yes. How you doing, Stanley?
Okay. I'm doing very well. I love what Jason said yesterday. I was in ecstasy when he said.
I asked him to bring him, man. I ain't know you listen to him.
Of course I do. I always do. Black Authority. Fuck that is one of the best.
You got Black Education Radio. The interview yesterday's whole show is on YouTube already. It's on Black Education Radio.
Oh, no, I listen to him daily. I listen to him from what he says to black people and to what he says to black women, too. He goes hard on both of them, saying, you know, stop having baby with crazy guys that fucking going to kill you. Stop trying to act like you don't know what's real when it's real, you know. And he said a lot of things.
I mean, black women like thugs. They like guys with quote-unquote swag, so... You like that type of guy. Don't get upset when he don't take care
kills
of his child.
You.
Don't get
when he kills you.
Like, so he in that video, you seen the video, The Reality of Black Female Privilege. Have you seen that one?
Yes. Yeah.
You remember he was talking about 20%. 20% of the guys are making all the babies. He's like 30. They take maybe 30% of the guys. All they ones with all the kids. The other most guys ain't even dating. They not even talking to.
He was like, I remember when one video that really made me pissed off, he was like, when one black girl basically said in Facebook, I'm going to go see the father of my kid. And the father of his kid was a violent dude. And nobody told her, you better not go see him. She went to go see him, and she got killed, period.
Oh, you're talking about, yeah, I know you're talking about the girl was dating the guy, and she posted on Facebook she was scared for her life.
Yeah, and she still went.
Yeah, and she wound
and
up
nobody,
dead.
No friends, no
yeah,
person who's friends, no
picture.
Family. Everybody's acting, oh, well, you know. Nobody told her, like, baby girl, we got to talk.
But you can see, you can look at her pictures and tell what type of, I mean, the pictures in the bathroom half naked, tattoos all over her body, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
and, but I'm sure if she presents her a nice black man who's successful, she won't give time of day with that guy. She won't give time of day with a guy. I'm sure there was some guy that approached her that was correct. She would say, you don't have no swag. You don't have no thing.
Salt and Pepper, I'm going to tell you something crazy. Salt and Pepper, Will Smith was on tour with her. Will Smith wanted to date Salt and Pepper. He was crazy about her. Not Salt, but Pepper. Pepper didn't like him because she said he didn't have no, you know, whatever. He wasn't cool enough. Then she later on, she's like, man, I should have dated Will Smith. Like, you know who you would be right now if you had dated Will Smith. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
But you're making bad choices.
No, I love what he said. I love that he said that we have to stop looking for jobs. We have to stop saying things. We have to go back to the people who are rich and tell them, please tell us how you do. And that's what I did. I went to a Jewish, and I had to go to a best friend to talk to him so he'd open the door. He would have never told me things that was like, it was like the first thing we do when we get a kid and everything, we go get insurance for at least $1 million or $2 million for that kid, period. I was like, what? That's the first thing we do. And we save it for, we do it for 10 years. So we don't do the 401 things like you do. We do it for 10 years. And then we do the same insurance for our parents. And we do it for $1 million or $2 million. So we're covered for both ways.
Life.
So if our parents, if the parent dies.
Stanley. He's talking about whole life, right? He's not talking about term life.
No. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, whole life, or insurance life, you know, the life insurance.
Okay.
You know, things like that. And he's like, well, that we always start with $2 million. Then we take that $2 million and everything. We put the money to combine. So then we decide together when somebody needs a loan for money, we do it all together. If somebody is a Jewish person comes to us and say, I have a project for $500,000, we don't go through a bank and everything because we have the money together and we give them and we tell them to sign a portion and we have a little portion of that business.
Well, I mean, hey.
And
like
they continue like that, and they put,
but
the Jewish told me, they put
that's
their
what I'm
whole,
about every community when it comes to black people.
Yeah, they put their money together,
exclude,
he told me.
But they exclude black people in business. When it comes to business, we're excluded, and then when it comes time, they say, oh, well, you shouldn't see color. I'm not, I don't have any problems with white people or anybody else, but if you're going to operate a certain way, you have to play by the rules of the game. The rules of the game is if you are black and you own a business in my community, I'm not coming in there to patronize you because I'm not black. So why is it that when I say, okay, well, we need to try to get black people to patronize this business because other people do the same thing. He said that point about the Asian, Hispanic lady skipping over a Hispanic restaurant and going into a black restaurant. That doesn't happen normal. So when I say stuff like that, let's not look at it like it's racist. Let's look at, okay, these are the rules of engagement.
And we need to teach the children the truth. Stop going for a Jordan. Stop going for a Nike. And he talks about it. And even the Jewish said, we don't go with those things. You know what? When we want to get those Jordans and those Nikes and those companies, those things like that, we go to the manufacturer and say, you better buy them. You better give me those Jordans for $10. Don't sell it to me.
Let me say this right here. I told him yesterday, I said, those black athletes, when they tried to make these shoes like Stephon Marbury, the mistake was that he tried to sell them for $30, $40. You can't do that to black people. That's why he said FUBU charged a premium because he understands the black market. You have to understand the people who you're trying to market to. You can't sell them nothing for $30. You have to sell them for $130 just for them to even think they got something.
That's exactly. And that's a philosophy that he said. You know, he said, look, you need to go back and teach as black people and everything. We need to teach the whole – young people the truth about business. We need to teach them the whole truth. You know that money? You need to find a way to make that $20 or $100 or $200. Try to find a way to make $400 out of this. And that $400, you have to find a way to make $1,000. And that $1,000, you got to make a way to make $10,000 out of the $1,000.
Hey, Stanley.
Go ahead.
Can I get a loan, man?
Go ahead.
I said, can I get a loan?
What is it, Jeff?
Jeff, you need money?
I don't want but $100,000, man. But $100,000 would just, you know, set me off right here, man. That's all.
I know everybody wants to get $100,000, but the thing I'm telling you, if you want to make $100,000 and everything, try to do business on the internet. Try to do something internet because e-commerce is going to explode. E-commerce is an industry that's worth e-commerce. Okay, just to give you an example, Amazon.com used to be nothing 5 years ago. Now it's number two or three in the world.
I talked to not so blind Mike
about that. He's really into that stuff. And if you really look at it, you can go to Flipper and purchase websites that are already monetized and making money. You may pay like $500 for a site that's making, let's just say, $40
5229-330-781-9600 or toll-free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at TracyandFriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. Interesting conversation going on here. We'll have to do this before the day is out or have Doc Hill come back on another Wednesday and talk about some things because we need to talk about insurance.
Because he's bringing up a lot of dynamics about Obamacare that you're not paying attention to,
and you need to have an understanding that nothing in America is free.
Mm-mm.
Nothing. I've got to go back to Stanley. Stanley, go ahead, and Alabama and Matt, you guys were talking about yesterday's conversation. And Stanley
yes,
was deciding
I was, I would, like I said, when I talked to the Jewish person and I told him how you make it and everything, he told me some stuff that I was like, wow. He said stuff like, when we get kids, we make sure that we have a life insurance for them for 10 years for $1 million. And when we have parents, we do the same thing, number one. Number two, we take the money, all the money we have as a Jew, we put it together. That means when somebody is Jewish, comes to us with any kind of project and needs that money, we tell them, we give them that money to that person who's Jewish, and we take a percentage of that business to be part of our business.
That's how
number
the Amish
three,
do it, too.
Yeah. Number three, we don't go to, like you people, buying Nikes and Jordan and things like that. We go directly to the manufacturers who are buying Zor Jordan for at least a dollar or two before they sell it to $100 or $200 down, and we try to find a way to get it at that price, $10, $20. And number three, we try to get prices very high to people because we don't want to compete with price. We want to have the highest price, so when you put a price very high for anything, people will buy it because they think that it's higher prices, that means it's more expensive, that means it's worth it. That's why Hugo Boss and everything is worth a lot more money than a normal jacket and everything, but it's just a name. It's just a brand. It's the same thing. It's just the price that they decided to put higher.
I've known
that. And he said, as black people, you need to change the whole thing of children. You need to tell them the truth of business. Having a job for the rest of your life is not the way to go, period.
I was eating out Saturday, and a friend of mine, he saw me. We talked a little bit, and he was sitting up there. And, you know, sometimes black people, we're real combative. I was talking to this guy, and the guy was with him. I didn't even know him. I spoke to him, so I started talking about, he asked me what I was doing. I said, well, man, you know, I'm in IT, but I'm going to get out. I'm going to get back into real estate. You know, ain't no money in IT like that, for real. So he goes, whoa, wait a minute, brother. You don't know what you're talking about. I say, look, man. So we started talking about the hourly rates. So I sat there and I said, look, man, I make what you just said. I'm not trying to say it like it's not good money, but I know that if I'm going into a company right now working, he's paying me $60, $50 an hour, that he's probably making millions off of me. So I'm working to create his wealth. So
exactly.
That's not – I got to have a different – I have a different perspective on jobs. Look, I'm going to keep doing this till my heart stops beating. I'm going to keep going for it. I mean, that's – That's how it is. And I feel like we have to work on our own. I think what stops us, Stanley, is our own bad habits a lot of times. Like, it's necessarily always racism as much as how do I manage the money that I do make. If I manage my money properly, getting wealthy is not that hard. It's really not.
And we have to stop caring about what other people say. And I agree with Jason. Too much. I'm sorry, Tracy. I don't agree with that part when you say we have to care about other people. If I'm good, if I'm making $1 million or $2 million a year, I'm not going to have the same look as people than if I'm making $10,000, $50,000 a year. I'm not going to get the same respect. I'm not going to be treated the same way. Period. And that's blood.
What?
That's being honest.
But let me ask this. Why not just be a good person and just do a good job?
You could be a good person, Tracy. You could be a good person, but you're not going to be treated the same way. Power goes with power.
No. No, I disagree. I disagree because respect will get you a long way where money will get you. I know some real I know some real rich jerks.
Yep. And I know some very modest people. Because people know of their integrity, if they walk into a restaurant and the rich people are there, they wave them over.
I mean,
okay, but all
your accomplishments.
No,
they're going to get that's a fallacy.
Okay,
no,
so
I'm saying within a vacuum. Okay. No, you're thinking. I'm saying if you had two of the exact same guy and they one got money, one don't, which one going to get the most respect? Come on now.
No. People get
okay,
people,
but okay, Tracy. Tracy, if you're saying no, explain to me how come nobody in Wall Street got arrested for what they did in 2008.
Those guys weren't the biggest.
Yeah.
No.
Explain me how come nobody got arrested.
But that's not
I,
that's,
as an American decide to do the same thing.
Stanley, that's not respect. That's not. That was being
okay.
able to buy
you.
Hold on.
I'm sorry.
That's power.
Listen,
period.
That's not power.
Oh, come on.
That was the money. Stanley, let me finish. That's like O.J. Simpson. That's being able to buy you the best attorneys and the best investigators to get the outcome that
they
you are
didn't even
expecting.
Get indicted, Tracy. They
listen,
didn't
listen.
Even get
that, but that's
they
listen.
Didn't even
that's
get
not.
Accused.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's not power.
Wow.
That's perceived
right.
power.
So you're telling me I can go get the Federal Reserve to print money. Oh, Federal Reserve print money, give it to me, give it out to banks. No, I make all the money, walk away. Don't even get the government, pay the government off. They don't even touch me. And that's not
right.
power?
That's
wow.
not
power.
If that's not power, then I wish I had that power, Tracy.
Hold on. I hear my name. Can you guys please not talk on top of each other? Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, the reason why nobody went to jail for 2008 is because the government was replete in allowing them to do just what they did. The laws they put in with the mark-to-market and how they did not allow the Bush administration to regulate Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac directly caused that fall, and then every other thing that was overrated was fell at the same time. And so, therefore, there was nobody that could be brought upon any charges. Why? Because they didn't do anything wrong. They were well within the law because they were pushed into doing this. The real estate people, the banks were pushed into making those loans because of what Clinton and them put in place. And Bush and them could do nothing about it because they resisted them talking about that you're racist because you want to regulate this. That's what happened. That's why nobody went to jail, and that's why they got bailed out first.
Jeff, fraud is illegal.
You
committed fraud, Jeff.
But
Jeff,
but
we're talking about
saying,
the fraud.
But
we're
but
not talking
wasn't
about
Fannie and Freddie.
They did
Go
not.
Ahead.
No, they didn't. They did not break the law. Those securities that they packaged were not.
Wait. They did break the law because they invented a new product, which was COD, that basically nobody understood. I'm sorry,
but
no banker said this is
so
what you're going to invest.
They invented a new financial product.
But they took advantage.
They took advantage of it.
Yeah, they took advantage.
Stanley, the power came from that they were a part of the law writing business.
Right.
Let's talk about Obamacare. Power is the insurance companies wrote the law.
And have you noticed no insurance companies have complained?
None.
About any.
No, because the Affordable Health Care Act was written by insurance companies, which are going to make them benefit.
And
so you don't have to worry about them breaking the law because they wrote the law.
And
so if you look at Wall Street in 2008 and what happened with the Securities Exchange Commission, they wrote the law, so they wrote themselves so that they could make the money around the law. And if it all crumbled down, they can eject themselves from the law.
Right. And Obamacare is a classic case of bait and switch, because they put in there that they had to spend 80% of what they took in premiums in benefit, but on the backside there was a guaranteed backstop by the U.S. government if they started losing money.
Right. So you have to realize what happens when we do things. And that's where the power is. The power is not in the money that you have. There's a lot of people that have a lot of wealth that don't have a lot of power. But if you don't understand where to put your mind and to put your positioning and to be sitting on boards of influence, that's where your power sits. You can be a broke person and have a whole lot of power. That's what we don't. But then if you really want something, you want to get respect. And that's where I have to – if a doctor and a physician and a professional that is respected will have more of a commodity than anyone that has a lot of money.
Oh,
money will give – respect will get you money, because respect will give you trust. No. Because if I trust you and I respect you, then I can go find you and you will help me do what I need to do. But if I have no respect for you, then all you got is what you have on your back. So best you have your own. And what we're failing to realize is we don't have the respect of a nation. They don't trust you to make your own decisions. That's why they don't want you to have school choice. They don't trust you to have economics. That's why they don't want you to give you anything that you can go make your own. They don't respect you as a people. They still think that you're inferior to them, and you act like you're inferior to them because you're always looking like a handout. But until you get respect, you have nothing.
Well, I agree with Jason yesterday. Until you get strong economic with black people, you have nothing.
I'm not going to let you get it. You understand? As a mainstream America, I'm not going to let you get the money because I don't trust you to do the right thing with it.
And that's why we need to put the money together as all black people and try to do it.
You're missing my point. You can put all the money together and you can do whatever you want to do. I will never allow you to play in my sandbox because I don't respect you in my sandbox because I think you'll taint it.
Well, there's not
okay.
much to do about it if we do it ourselves.
Yeah, we need to do it ourselves. We need to do it ourselves. Are you telling me, Tracy, we can't do banks ourselves?
Hold on, Doctor. Go ahead, Doctor Hill.
But then are you not better off creating your own sandbox?
You can create your own sandbox.
And then once you create your own sandbox, people take notice. Well, wait a second. Why are they no longer trying to come to me for what I have to offer? They seem not to care, and they seem to be doing fine on their own. Well, let's see, what are they doing?
Precisely.
You want to be part of their sandbox.
I mean, didn't somebody say yesterday one of the largest hydraulic fracturing companies in North Dakota is owned by a black guy?
That's true. But let me ask you this. What has happened every time African-Americans have tried to have their own sandbox in history?
Somebody tried to destroy it?
Why? Every sandbox we've ever had, somebody come and burn it down.
Has somebody burn it down or did
shot it up,
did you sell it out
it
from
down,
under yourselves?
Or divided it?
They just, I mean, you were talking about the hair care thing. Sounds to me like people sold it out from under themselves.
Are we not at a point now where that shouldn't happen?
No, because money is money.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Should we not be at a point now where that shouldn't be?
You would think so. But I'm just saying. I mean, do we have the respect for one another to be able to be able to bring ourselves together to actually do something worthwhile? Because we don't even have respect one with another.
True.
To where I trust you enough with my dollar.
True.
So how are we going to bring my money? How are you going to build your own sandbox? One sand grain at a time?
What?
Yeah, that's how everybody else does it.
I don't trust you.
Well, you know, if I could make
a
quick statement, And I think this kind of goes into what Jason was talking about yesterday and what we've been talking about today. And that's that true power is about an individual effort and not having to depend on anybody else, because eventually in the end you wind up becoming, you'll have to owe somebody in the end if you start depending on other people. When you do it individually and you do it on your own, without depending on outside influence, that's where true power is derived. No?
Mm-hmm.
I guess to some degree.
But you got really
yeah, but the
you always
thing
have
is
to work with someone. If you have a mutual interest, if you have a mutual interest with someone else, then there is no reason, if you have a mutual interest with someone else, you have something in common. But you never put all your eggs in one basket. You always have a fallback. So if this, for whatever reason, dissolves, I have this. So you always diversify whatever you do. You always do that. Because you always want to be prepared for if it rains.
That's true.
Always want to be prepared. Because business is business. Business, by its nature, is cutthroat.
Mm-hmm.
By its nature.
And that's what I'm saying.
So you always have to have something to fall back on. And if you have things to fall back on and you're looking prospectively, hopefully you'll be okay. Hopefully you can see it coming or anticipate.
I mean,
it's getting ready to happen.
Yeah, I mean, families, communities, religious groups that stick together tend to do better financially because they one thing, they educate their children, and the other thing, they keep all their money plus the interest in the community. I know a family down by Waynesburg, Ohio, that borrows no money outside of the family. If you want to start a business, you go see Grandpa. Grandpa pulls the money out of the company or the family coffers, and you pay the family back with interest. Us poor people, we borrow money from Grandpa. He don't want no interest from us because it's family. It's just a different mindset that those groups have than the rest of us.
And I think that's why. But how do you begin something like that outside of your own, your own family nucleus? How do you begin something like this in a community? Hey, South Carolina, how do you begin something like this? How do we begin to become to where we are working together for one common goal? Because right now we can't elect a school board that's going to demand excellence. We can't elect a city leader who's going to stand on their own two feet and do the right thing by our community. Who's going to have the kahunas? How do you do that? How do you send someone to Columbus who's going to sit down in the legislature and not care what anyone else says and do the right thing? How do you have a community organizer who's not going to get bought out by the next person?
Well, the community, first thing is the community needs to cover that person.
The second thing is
it needs to start with one family, move to one Sunday school class, move to one church, or some other from one family to one bridge club to one, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger as it goes by.
Because we still don't support the people that we have in the community that have our back now. There are people that in our community, and I'm just going to talk about Youngstown local, that want to support the community,
mm-hmm.
but we won't push them up high enough so that they can have the resources enough and the independence enough to stand on their own two feet enough to do that which is necessary.
True.
How many of us drive past our local hardware store and go to the big box?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So how do we begin something like this? We talk a good game about how we're going to support, and we're going to do. They're still trying to build a credit union. I'm watching a lady. Her name is Sister Jerome.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching her raise $100,000 from her phone, and she's 80 years old. And she did that in the last seven months.
Well,
we've been working on this for 7 years, and we still don't have the money that we need to do what's necessary. So we talk a good game about bringing our resources together. We talk a good game about lifting one another up. We talk a good game about supporting one another. But when the deal goes down, we don't do it.
And now, I would even say, just talking about a credit union, even that on some level would be problematic, because even if you develop your own credit union, you have to understand the people who come to that credit union need to understand that you still have to pay that money back. As opposed to, okay, now I can get a loan, but I don't have to pay it back.
That's true.
You know, so you still have to understand that.
It has to go by the same rules and regulations in lending institutions.
Because the problem has always been, well, this institution will not give me a loan. Well, a lot of times there are legitimate reasons why they're not, because looking over your credit history shows that you're less likely to pay it back. So if you're not going to pay it back, I'm going to go out of business.
Well, I mean, I think the average household that gets an earned income tax credit ends up getting about $5,000 back from the government every year. So
turn your radio down, whoever's calling the local line.
That being the case, and is anybody that being the case, that money, there should be no problem raising that $100,000 that they need, or $150,000 that they need, once a year from the community.
You're missing the point. You got to have a mindset. It's not about the money.
Because
the money is there.
The thing is, the average return is $5,000. And has anybody noticed all of the low rent car lots in every community this time of year are loaded? Has anybody noticed that?
Absolutely. But do you hear what I'm saying? It's not about the money. The money's there. It's the mindset to put the money into one pot. Local call, your mic is on.
Hello. Yes.
Yes.
I'm on air.
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Where do I start? Well, listen to you guys. First of all, charity starts at home, and let's just talk about it. The music and entertainment business, it does not necessarily help the quote unquote black family or survival units, as it's been called in many circles, because you know you can't teach a young black male to be a strong black male because of the apparatus of the system, you know, it'll devour him. So you teach him to tolerate, you know, what, you know, and you know, just, you know, deal with the system as it is. But where was I going to go from there? You guys are talking about business. First of all, Malcolm X stood for black nationalism. Nationalism is no different than Chinese nationalism or Mexican nationalism or Jewish nationalism. It is controlling the politics and economics of your neighborhood. And as far as the, you know, when you can control the politics and economics of your neighborhood, like a lot of traditional black cities did before the onslaught of, you know, the 70s revolution, and, you know, you had a lot of black communities that did that, but drugs ravished, like, a lot of neighborhoods in Northern California just went in and ravished those neighborhoods, okay? So, you know, you have to take things in perspective the way they are. Hip-hop, you know, and their value system is not good for African-Americans. You know, you have to say it the way it is, you know? And as far as the loans, Northern California, Chinese have what do they call it? They call it, I forget exactly what they called it. The club, was it the club? You take a grid of San Francisco of X amount of Chinese. Every household, every working member in the household, put a percentage of their check into this pot. Let's say it's 100 households, okay? A round number for perspective purposes. They facilitate each one of those households going into business with loans and everything that they need. And the last person participating in the club to go into business will put the seed money in, the first seed money in for the next club. They lend to themselves, basically. They do the same thing when they launder. They don't launder through banks. They launder through their own businesses. Now, that's not lawful, but I'm just saying, you know, they take care of themselves. And, you know, it's time out for blaming, you know, all of our ills on the white man. And, you know, at the end of the day,
Every man, woman, and child has the ability to make the right decision and do what's right for them, their family, their community. But as far as you, I heard you say, I'm not sure if it was you, somebody said on the program, how do we get to this point? You know, my Muslim buddy from Belize, when I got out of the service in 1984, he's the one who began me on the trek of knowledge of self. And he said, Rob, he said, black people's problems are is economics. We need the economics. But I looked at him and I said, Marcus, I said, economics will not make you love yourself. I said, the first thing that a black man has to do is get into a room and learn to agree with himself. I think it was 1982, 2 years before I got out of service. We were in Northern California dry dock for like a year and a half. And the NAACP came to San Francisco, and I think it was around something after 2 in the afternoon. And a white man got on the radio, and he said it was 107.7, KSOM at the time. He said, for the last 2 hours and 45 minutes, they have been trying to decide on us. And he put that over open air for all the world to hear. Since 1982, black people are known as a people who can't get in a room and decide on lunch. So the first thing we have to do is we have to get into a room and learn to agree and unconditionally love one another. Your eyes are lighter. Your hair is a little more wavier. You're a little more fair-skinned than me. Because you're only playing yourself if you think that black mixed with anything else in America is anything other than black. I beckon you, go and look at an application. You look at Filipinos, you look at Eskimos. They must have like 10, 12 categories. When you look at black, it's just that. It's black. There's no other deviation.
No.
I say the second thing we need to do is we need to take responsibility and take a numerical account of what is happening to our brothers and sisters in every state in America. And then get a podium to platform it and make it an issue. And if I don't know how many people is dying on a whole assortment of issues right next door to city, neighboring city, then, it discredits us because we don't even know what's happening with ourselves. But we have many issues, but I think that would be a good place to start, you know. And remember, there was a Black Wall Street. And like you said, they went in, and it was in a terrorist act. It was a hate crime of tremendous proportions. They went in and murdered, looted, burned, raped, pillaged, and they just wiped it out. As far as I understand, blacks are not allowed either to start their own medical establishments because that's something they didn't.
Hey, we got a doc sitting here. Doc,
what do you mean that they can't? There are companies out there that are black owned that are medical establishments.
Doc.
I mean like hospitals.
You can start one. You can't start another Negro League, but you can start a hospital.
You want to speak to that, Doc?
Howe University Hospital.
Yeah, you can start a black hospital.
No, wait, can't start one. Do we have one? Is the question.
Howe University Hospital.
Howard.
Teaching Black Hospital. Do we have one?
Yeah.
Howard University Hospital.
Here?
For the third time.
In Washington, D.C.
Yes, we do.
Really? Oh,
2041
okay, well.
Georgia Avenue Northwest.
You wouldn't know anything about that, would you, Doc?
I trained there.
I stand corrected on that point.
Hey, caller, you said something at the start of your discussion, and would you explain to me what your definition of a strong black man is? Because I know several black men that I think are extremely strong and who are extremely good role models for everybody.
It's like when you need to stand up for what is right. You know, I often said I could stand up for what is right, 15 minutes, in 15 minutes or less,
let me stop you for a second. Say stand up for what is right. Well,
as a black man, the things that, we incur in our life, with the mechanism and maintenance of white supremacy domination.
Well,
you stand up for it and stand against it, and I could be incarcerated or, dead within a short period of time. So it's why I say we have to teach our young black males to be tolerant because, it's next to impossible to buck the system in a lot of ways because they have control. You have to understand racism was institutionalized. You know, what kept the Klan alive for so many years was states' rights. Every state had the right to do it the way that they wanted to. You know, and a lot of times you had law enforcement were Klansmen as well. You know, you had law enforcement, you had the FBI, you had the Secret Service. They were all over the place. So, you weren't going to go to the law and get justice.
Go ahead, South Carolina. Hold on, local call. Wait a minute, hold up. Go ahead, South Carolina.
Here's the problem that I'm having. You made a comment about, you know, standing up for the right thing. But here's what I'm looking at. I've got a state senator here. He's our U.S. senator that stands up for the right thing and says so very, very adamantly. But they slap him down because he has, quote-unquote, been labeled as the ventriloquist dummy for the white Tea Party movement. Now, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, you can't find...
Tim Scott.
You can find wrong in everybody, but, yeah, it's Tim Scott. But when a man stands up and says the right thing, if it's not going along with what other people think, he's ostracized, and that's not right.
And let me see, this is a problem that we run into. You know, if I don't come from the same viewpoint as you, then I am ostracized by my view, even if my heart is in the right place to get to our destination of where we're trying to go. You know, everybody's not going to take the same road to get to the same destination. But I don't have to demonize you on the path that you take if we're trying to get to the same place. And I think that's a problem that we have. You know, I need Dr. Hill to be a physician. But I need Jeff to be a musician. And I need South Carolina to be in real estate. And I need, you know, Stanley to be in IT. We need all of these components to get ahead, and we need to be able to network with one another as we take our path. I need people to be Democrat. I need people to be, you know, independent. I need people to be Republican. But because I am and I become a Republican or I take a different physiological view, I am demonized by it. And that should not be.
But Tracy, I think the cosign what you're saying, look at religion. Like, I notice I can agree with a lot of brothers, conscious brothers, on a lot of issues. But they feel like they can't work with a guy like myself until I lay down my beliefs about religion, about certain things. Even though I'm like, well, let's work towards this and at least get to this one common point that'll benefit all of us. But it's like we want people to think exactly like us, or if they don't, we can't work with them. And that's the problem I see is like, back in the past, Marcus Garvey had people in his movement like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King who were completely opposite, but they wanted he came out of that movement. They all came out of that movement. So it's kind of like, now it's like, okay, brother, you know, you ain't enlightened enough, brother, to understand. See, you got the white man's religion, and you still thinking in the white man's paradigm. So see, you, instead of saying, well, you know what, you for the empowerment of black people, I'm for the empowerment
of
black people. Let's work together. No, brother, you got to see, you don't understand. See, you got to get, you need to be a Hebrew Israelite, or you need to be a Muslim, or you need to be, I'm like, man, forget all that. Man. Let's just work on empowering black people. Can't do it.
Hey, listen, I'm going to take a break. You're listening to Tracy and Friends. 312, your mic is on. How you doing?
Good, great. How you doing?
Good. Listen, I'm going to take a break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. We'll see you on the other side of our break.
Let's talk for a moment about a great doctor.
Hello?
Yeah. I mean, that's it, though, man. A lot of times you talk to a lot of conscious brothers, that's what they're going to tell you somehow you... Man, I mean, you almost there, man. You still got to, you know, you got to shed that. I'm like, man, why I got to see everything like you? Why is it we can't work together unless you think I got to crush every ideal that makes you who you are, and you got to see things my way. Then a lot of times they don't know what they believe in because they contradict themselves half the time anyway. So it's like, look, man, yeah, this is what I am, but forget that. What about this?
No, brother, see, you got to let that religion go first. What about this? No, brother, you can't be conservative, brother. See, you confused. And I'm like, that's the problem. We so worried about, it's like when we got people that are our allies, we can't work together with people that may want the same coming end results.
But here's my question, what are people trying to, like, what problems are we even talking about fixing?
My thing is this. I agree with the guy yesterday, Jason Black. To me, the main issue that I think that can fix, and you can always have somebody come in, no, that ain't the problem. But I do feel like you cannot affect the legal system. You cannot affect, you have to first, in order to affect that, you must be economically empowered to make some sort of inroads into government. In fact, Asians don't even try to make inroads into government. They just financially, you know, they're so financially stable that they don't have to worry about going to jail. They don't have to worry about certain things. So that whole stigma that goes with being a black person is correlated. I think it correlates with our economic system, economic base. And I think that if you, like the guy called a minute ago, control your community economically, I think that'll hold over on a lot of these issues. I think that'll stop most of it.
Yeah, but by me hearing all this, though, like he said that the guy yesterday, Jason Black, he said that it was a competitive, basically this is a competitive system where, you know, money rules everything, right? He said even it was rigged. He kind of said that. So I'm saying if it's like that, then could you blame anybody for whatever they try to do in this world to try and get ahead?
Well, I don't see anything wrong. It's not just America.
Even if it's murder?
Wait a minute now. I'm confused on what you're even trying to say. I don't even get what you're trying to say. Say it again.
Okay. Jason Black, yesterday he was saying that in order to have a say in politics that you need to have money behind you. So that's telling me that it's rigged.
But hold on. Asians don't really have a say in politics. Asians don't. Hispanics do.
Yeah, Asians don't. Yeah, if you think about it, yeah, you're right, Alabama. Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know.
I mean, having a say in politics, I mean, yeah, murder, lying, cheating, stealing. Yeah, that's what people do in politics. I ain't going to lie like that. Of course they do. But at the same time, I'm not saying we need to go do that. I'm just saying what if we just stopped voting and say, you know what, screw it. We're just going to all try to work on getting good credit. We're going to all try to work on making sure we don't drop out of school. No matter how bad the education is, we're going to try to focus on getting all A's, even if it is a bad education. We're going to try to get
that empowerment is getting your own schools, though, like getting your own schools and teaching real knowledge instead of teaching, like, useless knowledge that they teach in high school.
Hold on. See, that's the problem. It's like everything's not perfect. In a lot of countries, people, but we just, it ain't perfect, so just give up. Like, okay, well, then if you got the money, call Umar Johnson, go get him $3-4 million, let's start this education school. I'm all for that. But how are we going to get there? How are we going to get to that point where somebody can do these things? You got to start where you are. That's all I'm saying. Nobody has, these countries, people don't have these millions of dollars to do what they're saying. You don't have an army to go and fight America to try to stop them for things that you think are wrong. You got to start where you are. Jewish people, he said, like you talking about Jason Black yesterday, he said Jews came, they took over the comic industry, they took over certain industries, and now they are the wealthiest people. So we have to start where we are. I'm sorry. That's where we got to start. Take what you're given and master it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, like, just based on what he said and what you're saying right now, then you can't really blame when these kids are in the streets trying to sell drugs and all this and do all this stuff because
that's not mastering the system because now you're in a prison industrial complex. The average drug dealer makes $40,000.
Okay,
so you're teaching the kids.
So let's tell a kid. Okay, yeah, it's okay for the politicians to bring in the drugs.
49.
But if you
call in now to talk to Tracy and friends on Newstalk 600 WSOM.
Hey, yo, L.A., drop it on him.
Ah, yeah.
Give me a hug, baby. Give me a hug, baby.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229, and I hope you're having a good day today. It is the 12th of February 2014, and it is cold outside. What's the temperature, Sticks?
It was 2 when I came in.
It's a little brisk.
So it's probably up to 3 or 4.
But the schools are still open, so that's
well, that's good. Because for a minute there, I am...
Speaking of temperature, it is sleeting and snowing here in South Carolina,
there, you know,
and 27 degrees.
Spring is coming, right?
Eventually, yeah.
So now, Doc,
yeah.
You're in the OBGYN business.
Yes, I am.
Because of this winter, October, November, December, your business should be booming.
Well, we shall see. I guess with the event of expanded Medicaid, which is supposed to kick in April 1, we'll see.
Because, you know, right now you can't go out the house.
Yeah, true.
I mean, is that true or is that just a wives' tale that after every major event, every, you know, blizzard, tornado, power outage?
You need to have something to do, so, I mean, really.
Really?
You know,
yeah.
So there should be a huge, I mean, business ought to blow off.
Then you figure, you know, you want to say, why do people of less income, minimal income, or no income have more babies? Well, if you have nothing to do, you know, that fills the time. Think about it.
I'm not disagreeing with
you. Think about it. When you got stuff to do, you don't necessarily have all that time, too. You know.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense, and they say it's always been.
Yeah.
You know, cold winters, rainy days.
So if you're stuck inside, you know.
Yeah, that's what people do.
Yeah.
Most people. Hey, the number is 347-945-5229. What are you guys talking about in the chat room?
Please let him finish his point, Tracy. Please.
And you got to tell me what the point was. You got to start us off because, remember, we're coming in late. So what are you talking about?
He was asking a question. I really would rather him explain.
What was the question?
Because I can't help but. Go ahead, man. I don't know his name.
Yeah, I was saying that if it's okay for politicians, you know, for the government to bring in the drugs into the communities, and they don't get no years in jail, but the young kids get like 20 years in jail, and nobody does nothing about it. Oh yeah, you know he's a criminal. Yeah, but the government but you can't stand up against the government. So yeah, they don't want to demonize the government, but the kids in the neighborhood, they get demonized.
Can I unpack that one, Tracy? Please.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, what we were talking yesterday, if you were listening yesterday, he said he was trying to cite. He was using him as a reference. Yesterday, he said in order to affect the politics, which is what he was talking about. With I know, like they're bringing drugs in from Afghanistan. In order to affect that, you're going to have some economics. In order to have that economic. It's still the same thing. You still have to start where you're at. Why does that mean go sell drugs? He made a point about going and selling drugs because they're doing it. I want him to expound on that.
No, I said that by people, if you by condoning the economic empowerment, which means having a say in politics and by the own governments bringing in the drugs and doing all that, I'm saying so that means that you know, you need money to do this and you need money to do that. And he said it's a competitive world. It's a dog-eat-dog world. So how can you knock somebody from a normal citizen or whatever for killing somebody or for selling drugs when your own government does it and you're okay with that? How can you judge
okay,
somebody
I wasn't,
else?
Hold on,
Alabama, let me knock on this door. This is where your political influence. See, people think that it takes money to drive politics, and it doesn't take just money. It takes money and votes. Money does not vote. Your vote is being manipulated. And because of the lack of education and the lack of knowledge, people don't know how to work the system once they become a part of it. Most people who are even elected to the legislature don't know how the mechanics of the legislature works. People who are sitting in office do not understand how city council works and how the administration works. And because you do not know, you're just sitting there casting a vote, not understanding the political nuances that stand behind it. And right now, you are being manipulated into a system that has been destroying you over the years, but we've been doing nothing about it, and that's our fault. The miseducation of the Negro is our fault because we have not educated ourselves and one another on how to move the mechanics of the life in which we live. whether it be in economics, whether it be politics, or and it be what your belief system is. So we go and we sit in the chairs and we think that we've done something, and at the end of the day, other people get rich on your demise. So when you talk about drugs in the community, it is up to me to have the infrastructure in my communities to say, when you come here, we will not take the drugs that you give us. And to demand inside of my family unit that you will not sell the drugs as my child. I will not accept. When we grew up, and I can only speak about my house, if I brought an extra ring in on my finger, my mother wanted to know where it came from. And if she did not appreciate where it came from, it had to go back. There were curfews, there were rules, there were regulations, there were things were going on. A young man just couldn't come and lay up in my bedroom and talk about we were studying. That was not happening. If I've told you guys, I've done a lot of drugs, but I was never so high where I did not try to act sober when I walked in the front door of her house. I'm serious about that. I might have been as high as a kite, but I had sense enough to know you better try to get from the front door to your bedroom before you acted crazy. Because I've never been crazy enough to go in there and cuss her out and talk about I was high.
Plus, stop at the store and get some breath mints.
See what I mean? I've never been. We have to understand that. And what we've done is we've taken that kind of mechanism out of our community. The respect for the home, the respect for father, the respect for mother.
I tell you, I give you another point on that. You know, I've had young people come to my office, and it was obvious that before they came, they were out getting high.
Ooh.
They can smell it in the exam room. And I'll tell the young man, you know, I'll sort of jokingly initially, but my point is, you know, I'll tell the young man, are you stingy? Are you greedy? What's going on? He said, what do you mean? You're not going to give me none? What are you talking about? The weed. What weed? I'm getting high from the contact.
For real.
So my point is this. If I can smell it that strongly, it's out of my waiting room. That's disrespectful.
Absolutely.
So please do not come to my office again having gotten high. Now, several things will happen. One thing will happen. They'll apologize and not do it again. Or they'll transfer it to another doctor who's not going to say nothing but talk about them behind their back.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you have to, but there should be a decorum, and that's where we're losing. When you talk about things that come into our community, we don't have to accept everything that comes into our community.
And I'll take it a step further. Now, will I lose patience? Yes, but as I told a young man the other day, not that it's a bad thing, but I'm not gay, so I have no desire to see what color underwear you're wearing. No desire.
Bottom line.
So the point being, pull your pants up, at least while you're in my office. Pull your pants up.
Now,
each time a person comes, at least they'll have their pants pulled up in front of me. Now, if they go someplace else,
that's their business.
I understand that people are laughing and talking about you behind your back, about that's how black folks are. And hence, you're not going to get any respect, and that's going to have a trickle-down effect on anything you try to do. So hence, you can't then say there are no jobs. No one is going to hire me because in order to advance in life, you have to present yourself in a respectable way in order to be taken seriously.
In Alabama, I'm going to let you in, but that comes from self-respect and respecting my environment. My mother demanded the respect of that house. There was no negotiation of the respect in her house.
Yeah.
Now, what I did outside her house was between me and what I did.
Yeah.
But when I hit that door, and our community has to have a door, and before you come into my community, you need to respect everything coming in. And when you speak as one cohesive unit, the police have to know that you have to respect me when you knock on my door looking for my son. And I'm going to demand that you respect him in my presence. And if you raise your children with that mindset, hold on, if you raise your children with that mindset, you won't have to worry about what's going on when you're not around. Go ahead, Alabama.
Well, Tracy, the gentleman just said, go ahead and sell drugs and do certain things because the government's doing it. The thing is, if you think you're at war and you believe that the quote-unquote man is out there to get you, why would you get high? Why would you sell drugs? Why would you drop out of school? Why would you do these things? That's not war. You're not – if you're at war, You probably need to get your education. You need to get yourself together so that you can really have an impact instead of sitting in a jail cell for 30, 40 years because you kept it real. I mean,
because
I just don't understand
but Alabama,
how
because
that's fighting.
I'm,
you're not fighting a war like that. You're not. If you really think you're at war, that's the dumbest thing you can do. Stupid.
But this
is
the
that's
problem, Alabama. No. What it's called ignorance. Because every generation should teach the next generation. And what is happening is we have not taught our generations the art of war. The art of war is in your mind before it is in your brawn. It's how you act. It's how you present yourself. It's how you stand. And we have not taught our younger generations that mindset. And because we have not, and I was thinking about this last night, most of my girlfriends that I grew up with are either married or don't have any children. And they would make excellent mothers and excellent wives. Most of the guys that I grew up with, they make excellent fathers and they make excellent husbands. But then I look around at the generations that are around me and that are having children right now. They don't need to have any more, yet they're having children like it's a business.
Yep.
Where I need to have 5 or 6 children of my own because I'm going to take care of them, I don't have any. Yet these girls are out here and these guys are out here and they are doing stuff that is, and they're not teaching them anything, whether it be the art of war or the art of poverty.
You're taught how to work the system.
And
yeah,
that's
but
sad.
By working
that's
the system, you're condoning
fight,
the system.
Pardon me?
I said by working the system in a way, you're condoning the system, and at the same time, how can you solve a problem when you don't get to the root of the problem? Everything that you guys talk about, other generations supposedly had tried it before, prior to this generation, and look at where things are at
we
now.
Didn't try it. We didn't
changed.
Try it.
Well, what's your
listen.
Solution then? What's your solution? What do you think we need to do?
Now, Alabama, hold on, listen. I got to take a break in about 2 minutes. I want you to understand this. The
good.
Solution, I actually, my selfishness caused the next generation not to become as strong as it should be. There was a couple generations that were hijacked. And we need to understand that they were hijacked. There were people who took over when Martin Luther King died who did not have the people's view in their focus. They were not there. They got the money, but they didn't do the work and they didn't do the time. They didn't stand for the cause and they weren't willing to take the bullet. But they were willing to take the money. And we were bought and sold, and we need to understand that. We were bought and sold for pennies on a dollar. And we didn't get anything out of it. We should not have been here. When we look at the Black Panthers of yesterday, we should have stood up and said, we're not going to allow you to take them to jail because they were doing good things. And we should have been willing to die for that and take the hoses and the dogs and whatever was happening. But as long as they gave us a little job, we went to work and became quiet. They let me in the front door of McDonald's, and I became okay with that. And that's just the truth of the matter. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WS.
Go ahead, bro. What you think that solution is? You said all this stuff been tried and it didn't and it failed, and we're just going in circles.
I'm not gonna come here to say that I have a solution or anything, but I'm just pointing out what I feel is the truth, you know. But I'm not gonna say I have any solution or let's solve this way.
No. What I'm saying is, why do you think I condone murder and selling drugs and doing that? Because I'm saying, hey, start where you are until you can get to the point where you can affect that change that you're saying. Where you want to overthrow, so basically you feel like the system's unfair, and if you want to overthrow the system, you have to understand racial politics. So you have to start with economics. I don't get how we can, any other way, you can change it. I'm just trying to understand what if you feel like that. I'm just going off your premise because it just sounds like to me when people say that, it's like, okay, well, you guys are saying that this stuff been tried. So what do we do? When it was tried, what was done? The game was played. That's what happened when Marcus Garvey had 15 million black people behind him, which is pretty much almost half of black people, and probably even more at that time, were behind him. That guy was powerful. Who took him down? The CIA came in, well, the precursor, J. Edgar Hoover. That's how he got his name. These people came in, put spies in there and certain things to stop this guy. from doing what he was trying to do. So I understand to a certain extent that the system's messed up, but you have to play the game. Otherwise, if you don't, you're playing it whether you want to or not. When you go shopping, you're playing the game. You put gas in your car. When you pay your power bill, you're playing the game. You're doing
Alabama.
It because you're still indebted to somebody.
Alabama, I have a huge solution, but the people are going to be afraid to do it. But it's going to have to take some brothers that don't care, like me and some others, about whether somebody tries to assassinate them or not. See, I was politically assassinated, and so I understand. I just didn't die. Now, here's the bottom line. You're going to have to start in your community. First of all, it's going to have to be three-tier. You have to get people in education, getting these third and fourth grade kids before they totally are working. That's number one. Number two, you're going to have to clandestinely meet with the drug dealers and the people that run the neighborhood and tell them, look, you're going to have to start thinking about other people than yourself right now, and we're going to have to build something. You do what you do, and what you do is killing us. So why not think about investing in your neighborhoods and making them good, nice, clean places to live and better things for your family and other people's family than what you're doing. Then that's when you bring in business people and you let these guys find their way, whatever way we get to let them do it, and to find their way to investing some money in some things. If you include them, they'll do it because they want to be included. What they hate is when you exclude them and you dog them for what they do. Well, what they're doing is desperate. This is the way they make their living. They don't see it like we see it. They see it as pure survival, and they're willing to do whatever they have to do to survive. But the thing is it's going to take leaders, not just a leader, leaders, to make these moves. I can put the program together. I know what to do. But the thing is it's going to have to take buy-in from people, and people are not going to, you have to have those people who aren't afraid to die.
So why don't you go, like, knocking door-to-door and spreading the message?
I don't need to go door-to-door. That ain't going to work. You need to broadcast. And you need to get players. You always get the head. When you get the head, you have the whole body. So you get who's running the black community, and that's the drug dealers. That's who's running it. The mafia still has their hand on their neck. They don't have to talk to nobody. You do that, and that's what you have to worry about. Because the mafia will see their base start to slip away, and they're going to try to hold on to it. They still exist, in case nobody knows. But the thing is you have to go legit to make something of yourselves. You have to get smarter. And that's one of those messages
what sounds like to me what you're saying is, if you're going legit, then that means that they can't come. If you're in war and they come check you, Your papers are legit. They can't really mess with you if you're legit.
But they're gonna come up with like a some gay little like charge and for something you didn't even do, man. These people are the devil themselves.
No, they can come what they want to. If you're on the right side of their law, you have to play that game. And if you play that game, they cannot touch you.
If you got your papers together, it's been proven, if your stuff is together, they had to get Marcus Garvey on taxes. They couldn't get him. They tried all types of ways to get him. They had to get him on taxes. Now, had he had his taxes together, they wouldn't have had nothing on this guy.
And he might have had his taxes together, but they can't do that these days. There'll never be another Black Wall Street. You understand? They'll never be that again because they can't afford to do that anymore. Everything is too far out in the open. So what you have to do is you have to beat them at their own game. And we always do. That's we should see that.
But Jeff, they've been beat at that game before, though, Jeff. They've been defeated. It's like, they act like it's impossible. Why fight the bully because he's bigger and stronger? You can fight the bully. The bully can be beat. He has been beat before.
Absolutely. And it's going to take those of us that ain't scared. You can't be scared.
I ain't scared of these lames, man. They're lames. They're a bunch of lame-ass nerds.
Right. They are, but they wield a whole lot of power. And the thing is you have to find out how to take power from them. And that's what we're not doing. The way you think,
if I gave you a Harvard law degree and you a millionaire and you work at Goldman Sachs right now, but you got your same mindset, can you do a lot more to help the black community if you're making millions of dollars doing certain things? Can you make a bigger impact and sort of put a dent in that instead of saying, well, hey, I'm going to go sell drugs and you get locked up and you're in there till you're 40 years old, you can't vote, you've been immobilized. It's a game. It's chess. We're playing checkers. The checkers is selling drugs.
I'm not saying
that
I'm going to sell drugs, but I'm saying that I really don't. I don't try to demonize the kids for doing that. You know what I'm saying? Because I know
I'm not demonizing them. I'm saying, but they're not playing at a high level. That's all I'm saying. I'm not demonizing them. I know they're trying to feed their family. I mean, we all grew up around drugs. I grew up around a lot of them. A lot of them are now legitimate members of society. They're not drug dealers. But I knew guys that were, when they were younger, they sold drugs.
I just feel like
right now we can affect some real change if we start where we are, start small. I don't care if it's a lawn service. Start something and then have that mindset like he was talking about.
How do you start it without no money, though? How do you start it? That's my question.
Wait. I bet you, I've never been up there where you are. I guarantee you. You go in the club tonight, it's going to be catching there, buying popping bottles with sprinklers in the bottle. It's going to be strip clubs. It's going to be joy. They got on $250 shoes. The average business is started with $5,000 or less. I don't want to hear that. There are no excuses. Black people make $1.1 trillion a year, and we always tell them we can't get nothing. We can do something. The average business, it don't take that much to start a lawn service. You can start with a push lawnmower if you determine.
Yeah.
If you determine, you can start with a push lawnmower and a rake.
Right.
I'm going to give you something on spiritual tip. The law works by faith. Anything that you want to do, you have to believe first that you can do it.
Right.
And when you believe that you can do it, it comes towards you. See, that's the whole thing. That's why it's such a great thing that white people have done to black people, primarily in this country, and I'm talking about the white supremacists, not just all white people, that they have taught you to not think you can do it. That's what the liberal is there for. Oh, you can't do it by yourself, so I'll help you. No, I don't want you to help me. James Brown said it. I don't want you to give me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. That's the whole thing. So the thing is we have to get that door open, and that's what we got to do.
Yes.
But you're not any dumber. You're sitting up here having a good conversation and everything. You got something in your head. You can't have a conversation if you don't. But don't let nobody think you've got to have money to get something done, because you don't. You have to have the will to do it, and the money will come towards you.
Yeah.
And that one I know.
I'm trying to make this happen. You know, I'm trying to get I'm trying to get financially stable to have an effect. You know.
What do you want to do? What are you doing?
Right now, I'm just trying to, you know, work a job and save money. I mean, what else could you do for the moment?
You start doing something on the side, like cutting grass.
Yeah.
Or raking leaves or anything like that.
Hey, we're back. And you're looking at Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600, the number 347-945-5229. It is 5 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock here on WSOM, and it is the 12th of February 2014. And it looks as though it's still cold outside. Dr. Danielle just stepped in, and we're going to continue our conversation. I don't know what you guys are talking about in the break. How's the weather outside? Did it warm up?
No, it's freezing.
So it's still freezing?
It's freezing.
You need to turn the mic up a little bit more, sis.
She's on one. And the number is 347-945-5229. We're still talking about the conversation that we had on yesterday, because it was a very intense conversation. It was a very private conversation that was very, very public. And it was a conversation about how we change our thinking inside of the inner city and inside the black community to make it profitable and to make it effective and to make it economic stable. Because right now, when you look at where the African Americans are with unemployment, with health, with wealth, with education, their stats are just not up in the higher range as it should be. And if we don't become self-sustaining, we're not going to be here at all. In studio, I have with me, who's making all the noise? Hey, who's making all the noise? In studio, I have with me, have Dr. Hill. Dr. Danielle stepped in. She is our naturopath. She just, hey, Dr. Danielle, congratulations
Thank
for making
you.
It. And we have Sticks inside the studio. We've got, I think Jeff is, no, Jeff jumped out. Y'all kicked Jeff out the chat room. We have Alabama and Stanley, South Carolina, Not So Blind Mike, and Chicago's out there. And Dr. Hill, what were you going to say?
Oh, what you were saying about the black community.
Sustainability.
Economic development, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and a lot of that on some level is based on a prior caller that mentioned about keeping things in the community. That's very important. I can speak from personal experience. You know, look at the youth football league, the local youth football league here in town. I'm not going to give the name. I don't think that's necessary. But the point came up as far as funding of the youth football league, and the person running the league, you know, stated, well, we're going to send out random letters to people in the community to fund this league. And I said, well, you understand, you're not going to get a response because I get random letters every day, and I throw them in the trash. They said, well, somebody's going to respond. I said, why? It's a good cause. Well, if that good cause does not affect them, why should they care? You know, in theory, you should be able to go to those of your community for the funding. But the reality of it is, because you don't support those institutions within the community, then you can't expect those institutions to fund your football league because they do not have the money to fund the football league, since you all are not supporting those particular institutions. If you did, you would not have to worry about sending out random letters. You could say, come to me, and I could underwrite the whole league. But because you don't, I can't. So until you change that mindset, you're going to always be scrambling or begging city council for money.
But is that because of lack of knowledge, of lack of education, ignorance? I mean, networking, people don't realize, people do business with people that they know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's how business is done. I mean, Dr. Danielle walked in,
yeah.
And Dr. Hill was asking her some questions about her practice, and she was asking questions about his practice, and they began to network because they call it the click. You want to be able to network with people,
yeah,
so that you can grow your Rolodex.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that people don't understand. And I need to be able to come and do business with you, Dr. Hill.
Exactly.
So that I can increase your bottom line, so when I come and ask you to come sponsor something that I'm doing,
I can write a check.
You can write a check to do that.
Right. Or as opposed to, as I was speaking, another similar situation, someone approached me because someone else had given them a list of names of people we can get money from. And, you know, I told them, I can give you X, but that's all I can afford to give you because I don't have it. Now, I am part of the community, but because I'm part of the community, you can't think I'm just here giving out checks, because I have to have something to generate the money to give out the checks. Now, what you need to do, I referred them to people they needed to go to who should be more than willing to write you a check. And if they don't, then in response, you should not do business with them.
Because, and see, that's what I don't
and
understand.
And I said, understand this. Now, you can walk away from me mad and pissed off, but there's nothing you can do about it because you can't refuse to no longer do business with me since you're not doing business with me to begin with. So that doesn't affect me. Mm-hmm. Whereas the person I'm referring you to, if they refuse to give you a check, you stop doing business with them, they'll feel the effect. And they'll think next time when you come, let me write this person a check.
You need to, you really need to bring a group of people down to a 4-H livestock sale.
What? Explain.
Because that's how it works. You go to any county fair in Ohio, and you go to the 4-H livestock sale, and people will pay 30 to 50 to 100 times what that animal is worth because it's part of the community and because, okay, this kid's parents do business with me, or this kid's parents and grandparents have done business with me, and that's how it works. Where else can you find somebody that's willing to pay 3 or 4 times market value for something?
That is true.
And that's how it works.
There's another side of that as well. I mean, it's important that we do business with people that do business with us because that keeps the economy going. But if you're coming to a business and our office gets solicited every day by just about every community organization, especially the sports organizations, then, yeah, we might be able to write checks to some of them, but not to all of them. So there needs to be an understanding there that, yeah, we're getting money from the community and we're paying it forward by investing into these projects, but we can't invest in every project.
But then the priority list, when you look at the sports institution, whatever those letters are coming from, when they come with a patient, a client, a person that you know, when they come with the rapport that you have, you're more apt to say, I can't give you the full amount, but I can give you this amount. But if I've never known you, never heard about your organization, never smelled you, you've never been in my office, you've never been around, I'm less likely to write that. And that's where we need to understand that you want to have a rapport with whom you're doing business with for the civic organization so that we can get things done, whether it be the Little League or whether it be the Heart Association. Or let me know that you're going to be helping out. If it's a cancer association, it's going to be local. I look at Dr. Abdu. Dr. Abdu went everywhere, talked to anyone, the Joni Abdu Breast Cancer Comprehensive Center.
Okay.
I watched him go to everything, anyone who would listen, that he could gain a rapport with, that he could get a check about for a commonality because he had a vision and he was bent on making it happen. And I have seen the fruits of his labor, and they're like, wow. I have to say, just wow.
Yeah.
He raised the money, and now people have gotten behind him. Instead of him having to work so hard, now they're pushing him. And that's how you have to learn how to make things happen. But you just can't sit at home, write a bunch of letters, not do anything, and expect for people to just send you money. That's what I said about Sister Jerome. Sister Jerome's a 90-year-old woman, nun, who doesn't drive, sitting out at Earthland Sisters. But because of the respect that people have for her, her work speaks for her. She can get on the phone, and everybody that she calls will return her phone call, and if they have the resources, write her a check. And she can raise $100,000 for Sister Jerome's poor. But you've got 60,000 people in the city of Youngstown, and we can't raise $150,000 for a credit union. I said it out loud. Private caller, your mic is on. Hello? All right. Alabama, your mic's on. Maybe they all left. You just chilled. South Carolina and Not So Blind Mike, your mics are on.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I agree with the good doctor. Phone calls, and I agree with you, Tracy. Sending out a cowardly letter isn't the same as networking. That goes right with the junk mail. And one of the things, too, I've also witnessed, for a while when I was down here, I used some of my own personal experience being disabled and how to become economically empowered, and I used that. And I put together a little seminar I used to do, and I did it for some of the black churches down here, that economic empowerment. And I learned a lot doing that because, like, I saw a church, and the doctor probably has seen this, you know, where the church would, at the end of church every Sunday, 40, 50 members of that church would go to some local restaurant chain where you sit down and have a meal and they serve you. I won't mention the names. And yet, when it came time to put a $50 or $100 ad in the church newspaper to support the church a little bit, the manager of that restaurant would not do that. He, you know, and it's like, excuse me, these people bring you $80,000-$90,000 a year in Sunday meals, and you can't give them a $50 bill to support a little ad in your church paper? And so we boycotted them, and we let them know that even just one person adhered to the boycott, they were going to lose 15 times more than they would have paid for the ad every year. You know, and it's stuff like that, that, you know, Dr. Hill is right. If somebody doesn't do business with you, you got nothing to lose by telling them go away. Because it's, you know, they're not doing anything to help your cause, and it's that kind of awareness that needs to be out there in the community. Do business with the people who trade with you. It's that simple.
And we don't.
I had told one group that kept sending me faxes, calling me about sponsoring their function. And I said, you know what, this is what I'll do. I know this is where you go. Whatever they give you, I will double it. You know how much I had to write a check for?
Nothing.
Nothing.
And
think about that. I was telling them, that's where you go. Whatever they give you, I'll double it. That's a win-win for everybody.
Well,
they walked away pissed off at me.
Well, but people are lazy, Doc. I mean, people are really lazy, and this goes across all lines. Get back to the 4-H sale thing. Every year, they publish who the previous year's buyers were. Somebody like a Cope Equipment will get 500 or 600 letters. Cope John Deere.
Yeah.
My name's in there. Do you know how many letters I get a year?
How many?
Zero.
Why, your name's not big enough?
I don't know. I haven't had a single kid send me a letter to my P.O. box asking me to buy their animal. And I buy, well, I didn't buy last year. But except for last year, we buy every year at that sale. Because we don't have a big sign right on 62.
Well, now, you got to change that. And that goes back to people having, you know, we need to quit looking at people that don't fit the profile,
right,
of what you think,
yeah,
right,
philanthropic means. There are a lot of people who you pass every day who are willing to give, to support you, to do business with you, and you pass over them because they don't look like what you want them to look like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to cut that out.
Well, remember Mark Mangi was talking about his client that they went into the house after they passed away and they had, I forget what it was, a couple of $100,000 in the house, and they had a big estate, but they lived in one of these little shoe boxes over here on the other side of town.
Absolutely.
Those people probably, if the right person would have knocked on their door, they'd have probably wrote them a check for $50,000.
People don't realize, I mean, we are very, very prejudiced in what we think affluence and or philanthropic and or caring looks like. We really are. Because there's a lot of people who are very, very unassuming, who are very, very charitable. Don't have a big sign out on it. They keep their very low key.
Yeah.
They stay out the way if you need them. All you have to do is, you know, give them a call, and they'll be there for you. That's why you have to treat everyone with respect.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
314, your mic is on.
Hello, Tracy and Slicks.
Hey. Slick.
Hey, how you doing, Bianchi?
Bianchi.
Doing fine. Hey, look, giving money to the poor is counterproductive. I don't participate in those ventures. If you're going to do anything, but because it's counterproductive. It never changes their status. They just come back for more. And billing something for an organization they don't have the means to maintain it is kind of productive too. Because next thing it'll be just another blighted piece of property.
But what do you mean giving money to the poor?
Giving money, individuals giving money. Well, if it's a state of mind, what do you need money for?
Because you need to change the state of mind that they're in. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Give my alcohol
people need help. people need help, and we need to, we should not be so selfish where we do not help people who need help. But we need people, people that need help. Let me say this. People need hand-ups, not hand-outs. You know,
well,
people
I think
that are just
going
to work the system, that's something
different.
I'll
tell you what
different.
I do. I don't know what anybody. First, you know, I kind of detest the people telling people who have it how to spend their money. But the whole idea, I would rather take money, like you were talking about, Jeff was talking about drug dealers. I wouldn't even waste time on them. If you're going to spend time and your precious resources, spend your time and precious resources on those children who's trying to do something and change their status and change their life and create enough of them that the drug deals automatically go away. Either that, legalize all drugs, that'll put them out of business, or round them all
no,
up and kill them.
No, it won't. No, it won't. No.
Well, are you serious? But you don't want to kill the politicians that sell drugs, though, right? Because you can't compete with them.
That's what I'm saying. You can bring in a whole, you can fill the metro down, trying to rehab drug dealers, and after they all leave, the metro dome's cleared out. You turn around, the place is filled again. Those kind of productive things, Tracy. Of course, now you can participate in them if you want to, but I've, you know, done those things before, and they. And also, blacks need to work on trying to create more businesses amongst their population, because that's where your donations come from. You can't go to Asians and keep begging them for donations. They got their own children to propel in this society.
But let me say this. But don't you just have to start working within yourself? That goes back to you got to have a product. You got to have a plan. You got to have something. You just can't go out there all willy-nilly doing what you want to do. I mean, you got to have.
Well, I agree with you.
I was sitting, Dr. Hill and I, we were talking about some things earlier today, and he was saying it didn't profit me. So if it can't profit me, I can't play. I mean, you.
Well, taking money out of your pocket.
If I give you a dollar, I want a return. If it's nothing but a thank you and something. You know, I don't know, understand why we don't have coupon books that you're going to be able to see a return on your investment. But you need to have some measure of if I give you something, I'm going to get something back for it. No one just gives to give. Nothing is free.
Well, I agree with you. Giving money out of your pocket to someone because they say that they're down and so on, and that's not a plan. That's just an abstract reaction, the emotional reaction. Those children that's out there that's trying, that wants to, those are the ones you need to spend attention to. Let the government come up with some kind of program to herd all the other ones off into and work on those that are there to learn and want to propel themselves forward.
I want to make a comment on that because, you know what, I grew up in the poor part of Miami, and I can tell you from experience, being in a family with addicts, it takes one person in the community to show you there's a better way, and it ain't never a government person. There's not one social worker that walks into a house and says, okay, I'm going to show you a better way. They put you in the system, they label you, and they want to herd you off. What we need to do is actually create communities, and that community doesn't have racial lines. What it has is people looking out for each other. It has people who say, this person is a person and they are worth my time and energy.
And I agree with that. Because people don't
care.
Well,
people
have
a right to live.
You
don't
understand. I mean, if you look at back at the Great Society, what happened in the early 60s, when those social workers went into those homes, they didn't care about the people that were, those children, what was happening. All they were concerned about was doing their job, getting paid, and not, even inside of our children, in our children's services system right now, these group homes, they're not producing productive adults and children. All they're doing is they're just housing them. They're not creating masterpieces inside of here. And if you escape out of there, you're doing really good. And the church is talking about a hot air, but we ain't doing nothing.
Well, yeah. Well, if a church is not doing right, there's ways to get rid of them, but nobody never used them. They need to challenge their tax deduction status. But people have a right to live where they want to. When a government tries to, I mean, individuals are not going to create no communities. You're talking about a government project plan.
They do. No, every individual creates a community. When you connect with your neighbor, when you are a person with that person, you're creating a community. The government doesn't create communities. The government is funded by the people who create the community.
Well, I disagree. We have governments that herd people off. They would go in and they buy up.
Because we allow it. We give up our rights and we say, okay, you're in charge, when we're the ones who are writing the paychecks. It's those of us that are sitting in the community and producing and paying in the taxes that are writing the paychecks for those people. And if they're not doing their jobs and we're not kicking them out, it's our fault.
And that's governments would go into a commercial.
There was a young man that just asked us about the drug dealers in our community. We let them in.
Well, let me tell you what the government done here.
Come on. Hold on, Pianki. Remember back in the 80s when they were going into the car dealership and they were buying their mama cars?
To the poor.
But I'm just saying, when they were buying cars with cash and taking it home to their mamas and buying fur coats, and you know your boy is only in high school and he can't read, so why would you take a car and a coat from your kid that can't read? Where did you think that money came from?
Yeah, very true.
Well, Tracy, listen, here in this area here, we had an area in West County that was commercial property, and the government came in and turned it all to Section 8, and they moved people in there, and they actually formed a community. So the government does form a community. And you had people that said, look, we don't want that in our area. Put it over there. And that's what they told their politicians. That's what they've done. People build communities by living with where they want to with their feet. If you have an area that's all black or all Italian like we have here, not all, but at least 90-some-odd percent, that's the way people want to live. Leave them alone.
No. But I'm talking about if you look at the black community, if you gave them an option to live a different way, the majority of our young people would do so. If we created an environment where learning was fundamental and they could appreciate what they were going to get inside of them, they would want to, because all children come here eager to learn.
And wanting to work.
And we take everything from them and we coddle them and we don't teach them. And then we wonder what's wrong with them then when they become crazy teenagers because we will not guide them.
We forget. Fish don't know they're wet.
And you have to train up children. You got to teach people how to pay bills. You got to teach people how to be responsible. You got to teach people systems. You got to teach people how to do better. Because if you don't teach them, they won't do any better.
And you can't mistake a housing development for a community.
Because that's not it.
Yeah, the concentration camps.
Tracy, why come you mute my phone? See, that's what I say with.
Because you talk on top of people.
Conservative.
I'm talking on top of people, Pianki, and you know it.
Well, you talk on top. All right, tell me.
But it's my show.
Well,
I keep
listen,
on telling you that.
I know. It's your show. But listen, the thing is what I was saying before. I think giving money to the poor the way you're talking about it is counterproductive.
No, I'm coming.
I've gave money to organizations. I've helped sponsor buildings and things, and you come back several years later, it's all nothing but a blighted piece of property.
But that's because the people in that community didn't take care of that asset, not because it was counterproductive, but because it wasn't used properly. The people who were in charge of managing it did not manage it properly. That's not the same thing as community. That's a government project does not create community. It's the people who choose to connect that create a community.
And you've got to learn how to take – I mean, you have to be taught how to take care of what you've been given. If you don't know what you have, you'll rip up a dollar bill like a piece of paper.
That's sort of what happened.
Well, you know, we had –
Hold on, Pianki. Hold on. What did you say, Dr. Hill?
That's sort of what tends to happen, unfortunately. You sort of see, at least from my perspective, when you know – when your expectation is everything is free – then that's what you're going to seek.
There's no value.
That is what you're going to seek.
You didn't earn it.
You see it all the time. You know, I can write a prescription for something, and they'll say, I want this, and I'll tell them, well, you can get it, but your whatever, CareSource, Unison, Medicaid is not going to pay for this. But I'll give it to you. They'll go to the pharmacy, give it to the pharmacist. The pharmacist will tell them, well, if you get it prior authorized, they'll pay for it. They send it back to me, and I'll tell them, well, I'm not going to go through the legwork of doing this because it's going to be turned down. But the pharmacist said, But I'm telling you, it's been turned down 10 times previously. I'm not going to do it an 11th time.
Right. You call your insurance company and get it done.
Then you do. I'm not going
to
do it.
Or you write the check for me to spend my time.
Right. But I'm not going to do it. Because I told you from the get-go, it's not going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what tends to happen is, well, then I don't want it. Well, you know,
but it's only $15.
That's okay. I'm not going to pay $15 if I should get it for free. You know, so a lot of that is
it's a mindset.
It's a mindset.
And there's another
Because believe it or not, I've been asked to write prescriptions for plain Tylenol.
Huh.
So that's over the counter.
Well, when I was on active duty, there was guys that I was in the service with that their wives would go spend an entire day sitting at the clinic just to get a free bottle of Benadryl for a kid with a runny nose because it was free.
Yeah.
At the clinic rather than going down to the store and picking it up off the shelf.
Well, there's people that go to the hospital for birth control, for what they call a
ultrasound.
Ultrasound.
For pregnancy test.
Yeah. You can get one from the dollar store for a dollar.
But you know, what you were just talking about everything being free, there's a twin to that, and it's the concept of everybody owns it. And when everybody owns something, nobody owns anything.
Pianchi?
Yes.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to put a link in the chat room of one of these institutions that I was talking about where you use a lot of resources to direct toward those groups of children that won't fit in the normal, traditional environment. And, you know, even so where they are now, they still just ain't getting it.
But that's because we've taken our hand off the children and the mother. I mean, look at how we're raising our baby.
Well, it's
you
spend it's
millions
really
of dollars
education.
In this environment here. And you ain't taking your hands off the children.
But the problem we're not giving them the morals and the work ethic because we're so busy as single moms or single dads or dual working parents working trying to make ends meet that we're not investing that time in our kids. And I say we as a community, not we that everybody's doing it, but we as a community because there are a lot of children in that position. And you can't say, well, these kids just aren't getting it. They're not worth the time because that's not the case. Everybody learns differently, and you got to invest the time to learn how that kid learns and find that trigger that gives them that aha moment that says, okay, you know what, I can do better than this. There is another choice.
But that's John Dewey's educational model we've been using for 100 years. Every kid's a cookie cutter.
Right, but that's
and that's how the public school system is set up. So
it is,
if you're not part of the system, you're screwed. If you don't fit in the system, you're screwed.
That's where it's important for us as parents to pick up the slack. We know when we send our kids to public school what we're getting.
But the problem with the public school systems in general is that if a kid doesn't fit the mold, the kid is shuffled off to the side and the parents are kicked out of the system. You're labeled as a radical, or you're labeled as hard to work with, or you're labeled as, and you're ostracized. And I've been in these meetings.
So have I.
And if you're not a strong person and know where you're coming from, if you're a young parent, they'll just basically run you into the ground.
But you have not been. The problem is they're parents, and then they're babies, mamas, and they're different. There are people that house babies and have them, and then there are parents. There are people that take the responsibility of parenting. There are people
right.
that take the responsibility of fathering. And there is a huge disconnect between the two.
They're not the parents.
Like, what I mean?
They're not parents. They're just females that are having babies. That's going to be
that's
utilized
what I'm saying.
In the
right.
system.
That's what I'm saying.
They're
going to
be utilized
again,
in the system.
But
they're
gonna going to
be utilized
to
in the system of public schools and the prisons.
But what I'm saying is that we're going to have to teach some of these children and some of these parents or some of these babies' mothers and these babies' fathers how to become parents. And to take the responsibility of and the government is not the government can't throw money at it at programs that are ineffective. We look at all these programs that the government has and we wonder why they're not working, and we know that they don't work. I'll go back to Head Start. I think Head Start is a great program, but it is counterproductive because you can't have children in Head Start for 40 years and still have a third grading reading guarantee and the children not being reading by third grade. There's something wrong here. 50 years and they're still not reading by third grade, and you start them when they're like two?
Then they know how many prison beds to build, so they can put them in that system where they can make money off of.
But you're missing the purpose.
You're being contrary. What I'm saying is we've got to stop this paradigm. We need to make things accountable because it's not working.
Because Head Start has nothing to do with education. It has everything to do with indoctrination.
And we've got to stop it. Our children need to think. We need to have Montessori, where children, where we find out how they learn and then teach them how they learn. Every child learns differently. I keep on saying, we go by the agricultural calendar, but I don't see too many kids out in the field planting corn. That's crazy.
Well, and we have a public school system that is,
has air, it has heat, it has it all.
Well, it's designed for the way girls learn more than the way boys learn.
That's true.
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
Only about 30% of the population learns in a verbal linguistic format.
Okay.
And that's how our public school system is set up. That's how our IQ tests are set up.
So why don't we not change it? 30%?
Well, yeah,
30%.
Why don't you?
Yeah.
30%.
When the local community comes.
Most people are kinetic learners. They learn by doing.
Correct. Right.
Okay. And there are also, there are your learners that are very, I did a whole thing on this. And now I can't think of them. There's your verbal linguistic learners. There's your auditory learners. There's your kinetic learners. There are people whose learning style shifts them to things like spatial learning. Your architects and graphic designers, for example, are very spatially connected. And we, instead of pushing for those types of things, and I know what you're saying about being bullied, okay? Because I've been in the meeting with the school psychiatrist, psychologist or whatever her degree was, telling me that my son was learning disabled when the kid's a musical freaking genius. He can pick up any instrument and play it. If you give him something to do tactily, he's on it. He's an extreme kinetic learner. But according to the school, he was learning disabled. And I had to physically pick up a piece of paper and explain to this woman the difference between spatial and kinetic by throwing it at her. You know? I understand that frustration because I did it with both of my kids. And it's not that we can't do it. It's that we have to be strong enough, and we have to teach these young parents how to be strong enough. We have to give them the resources and say, look, here's some of the things that you can do for your kid. And that doesn't happen in the government program. We have to get out there, and we have to connect with people. That's what.
Let me ask you a question. Who is this we you're talking about? I hear this all the time.
That would be we.
Who
that
is this we?
That would be we, honey. That would be every single
The people there
person.
In the room there with Tracy. Tracy is not going to go no place tomorrow. She's going to be right back there.
The general population.
But you interact with people every single day. There's an opportunity every single day for you to better someone's life, even if it's just saying something nice to them, and that starts to build the connection. There's an opportunity every day, multiple times a day, to connect with someone.
But, Doc, we've been taught from the time we were in kindergarten that those people in that school are educated and they know better than we do. Remember?
I don't care.
They don't know better
That's
than
right.
me for raising my child.
Yes, they do, Tracy. They've been indoctrinated.
You've got
5 or 6 generations of parents.
We use that as an excuse not to do anything.
Some do, some don't.
Let me give you an example, young lady. You're talking about
we
do. You say we do things as we use it for an excuse. I've seen the we do that, and I've seen the we create academically highly successful, highly performing schools. And guess what? They close them. Wait a minute, Trace, let me finish. All that effort that the we done, all the marching and all the sitting in and attending board meetings at 5,000 strong, they create and put things necessary to create these highly successful, highly academic achieving schools, all black, where they outperform the county schools in the subjects taught. And guess what? They close them at some point in time.
So what happened that made them close? Because you got it open and you got the highly performing. Somewhere the ball was dropped.
Budgetary concerns.
No. Do you have school choice?
Tracy, she asked me what made them close at schools. I said budgetary concerns.
Okay, why did they have budgetary concerns? Somewhere along the line, that ball was dropped, whether it be networking in the community to continue to get funding, whether it be marketing and explaining and educating and getting the word out there at how well those schools are doing and what kind of a success rate that they have with their students. Somewhere
it
along
was all
the line,
in the
message
news.
Was not effectively communicated.
It was all in the newspaper, how well the schools are doing. 6 o'clock news, newspaper, so on and so on. People came out when they started talking about closing them, like they did every place else here in the last couple of years. They closed them.
So
all that work that we done.
Did you give to those schools in your community?
What did I give to them?
Yeah,
I'm talking about across the country.
Did you contribute to them?
The schools in Kansas City, I'm part of the National Black United Front. Yes, we've been working on that project since back in the 90s.
Okay, so you're financially invested in the success of those schools?
Schools.
But what I'm
they're not private
talk,
schools,
you know,
they're public
my
schools.
Question is, and my question is, if they close those schools, why did we not open them up as charter schools or as a private school?
Because they wouldn't. The State Board of Education, DESE, Department of Education and Secondary Education, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, the State of Missouri, would not allow it.
And my question is, this is my question, if you had the political clout, it goes back to what I always say, if you had the political clout, they would have never closed them. And
they would have closed them.
No,
they would
Bianchi,
have closed them.
They
did close
not,
them.
I said
they closed 38
had,
schools here in Missouri.
If,
they closed 40 in
had,
Philadelphia. They closed 50
if you
in,
had the political clout, they would have never closed them. Political clout always trumps money.
And let me
in
tell you
words,
what the,
if you had the political
these particular
clout
schools,
to make sure that the representatives that was voting for the funding was voting for the funding for your schools would still be open.
Absolutely.
Let me tell you. How these schools are running. Matter of fact, the we came together with their own plan and said we were going to enter a contract with the school district. And we would run these schools. We would produce these type of results for this type of money. And the money was less than the traditional schools, other schools.
And I said, if you had the political clout and the organization, that's where we lack. We lack this across the board. You think that you are doing something, but you're not. If you have political clout and you could vote that people out and get the governor out and get the legislature out, I promise you they would have never closed high-performing schools that you're talking about. But because we lack the political will, we can't get anything done.
Tracy,
that's
all right, let me respond to that. They had hearings at state legislature in Jefferson City. Our representatives, their representatives did attend, and they was lobbying against closing the schools. Matter of fact, they even got they got representatives out of St. Louis to join on with them.
You ain't listening.
You're not listening.
No, you're not listening. You did not have – you had a political voice, but you didn't have the political clout. And when I say that – that means when you speak, everybody listens, like E.F. Hutton. And what's happened is we do not have that because you – and let me say this. We do a lot of barking, but we have no bite.
You
and
stay there in Ohio.
Along the line.
You stay in – you in Cleveland.
I don't care where you are.
The surrounding areas?
Yeah, who's that?
Hold on. Tracy, yeah. This is Alabama. They had a $100 million lawsuit. City of St. Louis got it, built some schools, and the kids were still failing. Pianke should know about that. You guys got $100 million thrown into the government, which I guess that's what he's arguing for, government. They still failing. So I want to know what happened.
And you know,
that, I heard
and you know another point too, Alabama, in this particular school district, they had $2 billion. So what? $2 billion was put in making those schools work. Now, if you don't call that political clout, what do you call it?
It's called somebody else wanted that money to go somewhere else. Because you
they
did
built
not
brand
have the
new schools. They built brand
they
new
built.
Schools. That's what the people
what
wanted.
The people wanted the schools closed. Because if they wanted anything else, they
the
didn't have
The people
didn't
want the school closed.
Pianke, you didn't
read
have
the article.
Pianke,
I'm
going to
put
the
article in
the
chat room.
I'm not
going to argue with
vote,
you. This is your show. I'm going to put the article in the room.
Pianke,
chat room.
Answer the question. Did you vote the people out? that close the school.
Who are we going to vote the people out for? We can't. Those are those representatives represent that county in Kansas City in Missouri. Those representatives did what they was asked to do. We can't vote representatives in the outlying areas out.
Did the people
Boone
in that
County,
area?
Cape Girardeau, that's not. We don't have no vote on those representatives.
So the people in that area must have liked what they did if they kept them in. Or they just didn't know any better.
They for budgetary concerns, they had to close the schools.
Pianki, they were high-performing schools.
Hold on. All right, well, that's all I got to say on that.
Well, hold on. She just made a point, the female, I don't know her name, but she made a point about parents taking concern in the way their kids learn.
Dr. Danielle.
I don't care what school you go to, parents should do that anyway. I don't see what the disagreement should be about. I mean, that was just a basic statement to me.
That's what it is.
It is. We just need to be responsible for our kids. And the other, you know, the other option there is if a school is closed and you didn't want it closed, the parents have the option to pull their kids out and put them in a homeschooling community. And guess what? If that child is not in the public school doesn't get the funding for that child. You want to talk about hitting somebody in the pocketbook? There are choices.
So parents can just take any parents can just take their children at home. Quit their jobs and just go to educating their own kids. All right, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
You can do it. You can do it working.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can. It's totally legal.
And it works. And you'd be
Nobody
surprised
says
how,
it's not legal. You're saying
you'd
that every parent can homeschool their children.
No. Yeah, I'm saying that's an option.
We're not saying every parent can because of their circumstances. We're saying every parent has that option available if they choose to take that option.
But then you look at your politics, and the question is, do you have school choice in your state? And why is a certain political party fighting against you having the choice of where you educate your child?
Why was one of the first acts that the president did close down that system they had in D.C.?
Vouchers.
Where the voucher system that put the kids from the lower part of town in the same school with his kids. He did that by executive order.
You got to understand. I mean, you can homeschool your children with computer programs. There's a lot of good curriculums out there for homeschooling. But you have to be knowledgeable, and you can have community schools. You can have a classroom of just your community and 12 students in a church basement if you're willing to put the time, the effort in.
There are homeschool communities out there where each parent shares an education duty, and they bring their children together in a classroom-type setting, and each parent then teaches a lesson or a set, you know, there's responsibility there. And so every parent is not all day long teaching their child, but it's still the homeschool community. The point is not how we're doing it, but that there are options. And if one option is not working and we don't like the other options that are available, then pick an option that's better.
But just don't lay down and just complain about it.
Right.
Yeah, we can. Parents has got two jobs to take off early from one and homeschool that year. That sounds like a good idea.
Pianki, do you guys have voucher systems in Missouri?
No. You don't know how.
And who's fighting against it?
The NAACP, Urban League, Teachers Union,
okay.
NEA, so, AFT.
Okay, so now, why are the parents not taking up the authority to make sure that they get it? Local
the
call, your mic is
did,
on.
The parents did
okay.
do that. They had Representative Betty Thomas had the Betty Thomas bill, which would have done that.
And
they
did
fought
they support it.
It?
And did they? What happened to the people? Bianca, that's an excuse. Local call, your mic is on.
Tracy, we took busload after busload to
said earlier about the neighborhoods allowing drug dealers to come in.
Yeah.
The whole thing, organized crime, in which very much drug dealing is organized form of organized crime, cannot exist without political ties. The police make available all the pertinent data for a drug dealer or whoever, his homies or whoever, to get back at people who tell on him, who snitch. And so what that does is that polarizes, you know, the community against actually telling anything. Okay, so, you know, if the police are not going to protect them, then there's no reason to really say anything.
But
something else I wanted to say that in the black neighborhoods, They are redlined for insurance.
Those
and
are
also out. Redlined for, they're redlined for loans. You know, and there's a whole market out there between $100,000 and $5,000, okay, that the banks most of the time do not cater to. They make it difficult for you to even get a single $1,000. A lot of lower income people tend to lean towards credit unions, but out here there's not a whole lot of credit unions that, as I can see, that's available for people of color. Now you go to the West Coast, there's credit unions all over the place.
There's lots of credit unions here in Youngstown.
There's a lot of credit unions. You just have to know. You have to know about them.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter what color you are. They treat everybody the same.
Yeah, I mean, redlining is out. You have to now. You don't have to worry about redlining because now they're looking at just the overall
blight of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And when it comes to the drug dealers, Tracy said it best. Nobody's holding a gun to anybody's head when it comes to buying drugs. And if there's no market, there's not going to be any drug dealers in your community.
And you've got to stand up and do something about it. And we've stayed silent too long.
You guys said a whole bunch of things that I disagree with. I know you're running out of time here, but what I was referring to as when it comes to your area, if the police is going to make available all of your information, all of your pertinent data, and how these people can get back at you. Then it's a risky business.
Did you miss my point?
Yeah.
But if there's a drug dealer on the corner,
but you're missing the big flick here. And the big flick is it don't matter how many drug dealers you got on a neighborhood. If nobody's buying drugs, they're not going to stay there very long.
No, that's one thing. But in order to get the scourge out of your neighborhood, if you go do the correct thing and go to the police and say, hey, this is a problem, and then the police make available all of your data so they can get back at you.
Did you
hear? How am I missing the big picture?
Wait up, you missed. No, listen, sweetie. You're talking about. There's a difference. There is a difference between snitching. There's a difference between.
Both things need to be done.
Listen.
Okay.
There's a difference between snitching.
You can't make me naked when I go do the right thing.
Listen.
Both things need to be done.
Listen.
Charity starts at home.
Listen,
I agree with that.
Listen. You cannot. We're not talking about snitching. What we're talking about is if you train up your community to not be drug users, it's kind of hard for the drug dealer to have a business.
Easy said than done.
I disagree with that. I disagree with that. I disagree with that.
Trust me. The child with a healthy
I've
got to
go at the end of the day. Thank you, guys, Dr. Danielle. Dr. Hill, it's great seeing you. Hopefully you guys will come back soon. Sticks, I'll see you on Monday. And tomorrow it will be Health and Wellness.
Open.
We have Dr. Mason, Fit Family Doris, and John Bullock, and we have Dr. Brandy coming in, and we're going to talk about health and wellness and how well I'm doing at not eating potato chips and donuts and
I've been helped.
That's right, because you're not bringing me in those things
right.
I appreciate it. We'll see you guys on tomorrow. God bless, and have a good day.
Let's talk.
She had to go mention that junk food. She closed. Now I'm hungry.
No, they mentioned that they always make things sound easy. Then they talk about the we.
Yeah.
Oh, damn we. I hear that's been listening to that stuff since the 70s.
Yeah, I know. I gave up on the we a long time ago. It became an I when I was 5 years old. You know, now it's just the we.
The worst thing you can do in this government,
yeah.
in this country, is be poor and have to depend on the government. I mean, even to the point where you have to depend on public schools.
Yeah. You know, Piyaki, I met a man when I was 27 years old. I was coast and I swung through Texas. I was jobbing it around the country and stuff. And this guy was worth $80 million. And I worked for him for a couple of weeks. And I finally got the courage up to ask him, how the heck did you make $80 million? And he gave me the secret in one sentence, and he was so damn bright. And that's why I had to laugh about the guy saying, how am I ever going to get any money? You know, well, what are you doing? Oh, I'm working my job and this and that. What Mr. Bothwell told me, he said, you really want to know how to get rich? I said, yeah, how'd you do that? Because I'm trying to come up with a plan to make my first million, and I was about 999,000 short. and owed $50 of the $100 I did have in the bank, you know. And he said, do you really want the secret? I said, yeah. And he pulled me, gave me a bear hug and pulled me to nose to nose and said,